It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. Kevin Marks is here. He's going to spank me a little bit later on. We'll talk about in-app purchases and why the Kardashian game is actually pretty good. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 259, recorded July 23rd, 2014. What's a Kardashian? This Week in Google is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG. And by Lantronics, makers of the XPrint server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, even a Kindle Fire, to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And by Full Sail University. Full Sail offers both online and campus degree programs centered on real-world experience in the entertainment, media, and technology industries. For more information, visit fullsail.edu/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we Google, where we talk about Google and all the Googleverse and the Facebook and the Twit. We got the old gang back together. I'm so happy to see Gina Trapani in her offices. Hi, Gina.
Hi. It's great to be here.
I saw you yesterday in All About Android looking at that OnePlus One phone that Jason had.
Dang, that is a nice-looking phone. Ooh. I don't know. I really was like, I like seeing CyanogenMod on the back of a phone.
Isn't that
like
kind of cool? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it made me really happy. I was like, oh, hackers legitimized. That, I want that phone. I think that's one of the few non-pure Google phones, technically non-pure Google phones that I really want.
It's a great price. Jason had it on unbelievable.
Yeah.
Also here, Jeff Jarvis. That's him. You hear that baritone? That's JJ. He's a professor.
Basso Profundo.
I'm sorry, the Basso Profundo of Jeffrey Jarvis. Well, look at him. He's a professor of journalism at a university, City University of New York. The author, he's a published author of Public Parts and What Would Google Do and Gutenberg the Geek. Blogs at Buzz Machine. Actually, your latest post will be fodder for today's conversation. Mm-hmm. Also with us, glad to have him, Mr. Kevin Marks in his garden. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah. Nice to see you. I actually even have orange juice for my tree to drink today.
So oh, that looks delicious.
Oh, you are so obnoxious, Marks. You're outside. You have the breeze, the good weather.
It is a bit hot, actually.
This is how my mom got us to move to California from Rhode Island. She said you can go out on the porch and pick an orange from the tree.
Oh, freaking California.
Little did I know, that's how they got the Joads to move from Oklahoma and Grapes of Wrath.
That's true.
Didn't work out so well.
I miss it. I miss the weather and picking oranges off the trees. I have to admit, I really do.
What's the weather in Brooklyn?
Now I get to walk outside. Well, you know, you look at the temperature, it's fine. It's just if you walk two blocks and you're like instantly soaked.
Yeah.
And then you're getting on the subway and like surrounded by smelly people. Like it's just a different lifestyle. It's just a different way of life.
My office is right on Times Square and I had lunch the other side of Times Square and I always said San Francisco was brilliant because there are two San Franciscos. The San Francisco the tourists see is the one the residents never go to. Folks, no San Franciscan ever goes to Fisherman's Wharf for Giardelli Square.
No, of course not.
They don't ride the cable car, right? So it's a separate city just for the tourists. Kind of brilliant. New York now has that separate city. It's called Times Square. No New Yorker walks through Times Square and hugs a Guatemalan refugee in an Elmo suit. No New Yorker,
except goes that one to radio host. Yeah.
Or the naked cowboy.
No, you're right. Naked Cowboy. That's the other one, right? No New Yorker does any of that. But I had to actually walk through it today, and it's torture. Torture. We don't go to Bubba Gump's Shrimp. Oh, we don't do any of that.
It's true.
They have the world's biggest McDonald's there, don't they?
You know, we have in studio with us today Ranger Craig. He's the ranger at Alcatraz, one of the rangers. And Craig, do a lot of locals visit Alcatraz, or is it mostly out-of-towners?
Only out-of-towners.
when they have someone from out of town.
If they're there, they're towing somebody from out of town along with them. He's been, I've been, of course, to Alcatraz, which is a wonderful tour, highly recommended. But Craig has always said, you know, come for this. I'll give you a special behind the scenes tour. And I keep meaning to drag the kids there and stuff. I just never have gotten around to it. But
I think we should try to do the show from there.
One of the cells.
Yeah.
Don't they let you? Isn't there a night tour where they let you kind of spend some time, like extended time in the cells?
There's a night tour.
There is a night tour. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk about this. The first phone with the word cyanogen on the back. This is the OnePlus One, the phone you cannot get from OnePlus. They just put 5,000 more invites on out. What do you think? What's your speculation, Gina? Maybe you guys have talked about this on All About Android. This is, you know, they call it the killer, the high-end phone killer. But it's $300, $350 for the 64 gig version, which this one is, I think. And it has all the specs of a high-end phone.
Mm-hmm. I think this has a shot of becoming the new Nexus. And when I say Nexus, like I mean the phone of choice for power users who want the kind of pure experience with a few extra settings, right? Like cyanogen is basically like stock plus a little extras, but no crappy extras, right?
And you still somehow, and I don't really understand this, maybe you can explain it, you still get Google services. There's the Google apps are on here. Play Store is on here.
They clearly got Google certification, right? Because Google doesn't let any phone carry the Play Store or any of the proprietary Google apps unless they're Google certified. And with that agreement, I don't think all the terms of that agreement have been disclosed, but there's certain home screen placement and that kind of thing, right? So you're not dealing with an alternate app store. You get the Play Store and all that stuff, but it's cyanogen. And the phone itself is actually... It's gimmick free. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward phone. There aren't 17 front facing infrared cameras. There's no scrolling on the back. There's no crazy. I mean, it's just a flat phone, but it's a high end phone. It's a beautiful phone, and it's sleek, and it doesn't have a lot of extra crapware, and it's pretty plain looking. But the geeks will love it.
It's a lot like a Nexus 5, doesn't it? It basically looks like a Nexus 5, but it's.
It's bigger. It's 5.5 inches.
And it has that silver edge there, ring. Yeah. The back feels good, right? I mean, in the cyanogen branding, I think is powerful for Android, hackers and nerds.
Super cool. Now, what I don't know, and I don't know if Jason knows this yet, is the bootloader unlocked on this? Is it unlocked? You know yet, Jason? He's not there. He says he's pretty sure it is. But so it's hard to figure out exactly. You know, do you mind if I put it into recovery mode, Jason? let me try rebooting it. Because does it reboot into clockwork mod or twerp or what? I mean,
Gina, I'm not saying that this is ever going to be a big phone with regular consumers, but if a regular consumer happens to pick one up and get it, are they going to be befuddled by any of this? Or to them, it looks like an Android phone that just happens to be different?
The bootloader is not unlocked, but unlockable, says Jason. Okay, so go ahead.
It's a straightforward Android phone, I think will be pretty self-explanatory.
The issue is you can't get it. You have to, you have to get an invite or something. It's weird.
Right now.
Now I can find a few places.
Expansys US apparently has it.
Right. And so does Panda Will. And then also, I found a few places.
At a premium.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what sounds like, I don't know how much the availability is. It sounds like they're somehow getting it from somebody who got an invite maybe and reselling it. I don't know.
There doesn't seem to be any reputable places yet.
Right. Well, Expansys is reputable, but I, by the way, don't see it on Expansys' front page. I don't know.
The scarcity is certainly working in their favor.
It's a marketing-wise, right? It's a marketing thing. Would you get this
available
over the
starting
G?
From Q2.
Oh, yeah, it's been available, like, in onesies, twosies. I can't figure it out. Are they, is there some constraint on manufacturer, or is it all marketing? It's all marketing, isn't it? And yet, at some point, you've got to open up the pipes. There's no point in great marketing if you're not going to sell millions of these.
Well, right, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Maybe a ramp-up thing as well.
Maybe they're hand-making them one by one in a small... sweatshop in Thailand.
Chiseling cyanogen in the back.
It's just...
Well, they may have a process that's not completely perfect yet, and they're still debugging it.
But let me say this. If you put out this exact phone, which Oppo may have, because I think the Find 7 is the same phone. If you put this exact phone out without any of the marketing hype, and you just put it in the market with all the other flagship phones, does it stand out? I guess price-wise,
it stands out price-wise, because it looks like the other ones, but it's a lot cheaper. You know, it's like half the price of the Samsung flagships.
The market price on eBay is running $450.
Even then, it's still a great deal. It's $150, yeah. $200 less than a comparable flagship phone. I love seeing the CyanogenMod logo on it when you're booting it up. Now, this is, of course, anybody who's rooted in phone and put on custom firmware is used to this, but it's kind of cool to see it on a phone. And CyanogenMod stands to make some money because they're selling themes. So you can customize this with CyanogenMod themes. It feels very much
How like are that. They selling those themes? Are those themes, they're not in the Play
There's
Store.
There's an app called Themes Showcase.
Gotcha.
And they're typically a buck. Wait a minute. Here's $1.99. Here's $2.23. Here's $3. Maybe it's third parties that are selling this, and maybe it isn't CyanogenMod.
I had to quit the Nexus 5 and Nexus 7 Google Plus groups because all people did was say, look at my theme.
I know. So boring.
Oh.
It's so boring. And when they say theme, they show the lock screen.
Yeah.
Often with a scantily clad woman on it. And icons that look good, but you could never use.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
You know, this is the problem. When I get on the show, so now I'm ready to go buy this phone somewhere.
No, stop.
To be on the show.
Stop. Because the Moto X Plus One, someday soon, they said summer. That gives them till a couple of months. The LG G3, a lot of people raving over this phone. It's the first Ultra HD phone.
Nexus 6.
That's a good question. Are we going to see a Nexus 6 in the next in some time?
I mean, our dear friend Matt Cutts and others said don't despair the Nexus line.
Yeah, but that didn't mean we're going to make one.
That's worrying because my son just bought a Nexus 5 like yesterday, so he's going to be grumpy with me.
I see no evidence that there's a Nexus 6.
I don't either.
His previous phone was a Galaxy Nexus, which was 3 years old, so he's actually very happy with his phone. But if they come up with a better one tomorrow, he'll be cross.
Actually, I have to say, if this were in widespread, if the OnePlus were in widespread distribution, easy to get, you could walk into a phone store, this is the replacement for the Nexus 5, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It looks like an Nexus 5. It's that bit cheaper.
It's cheaper and I better screen.
What's his storage?
64 gigs.
64 for that price.
So it's twice the storage. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Then that's good.
For $350.
When it comes time for an update, right? Regular consumer buys the phone. It works. It's Android. How does it get updated? Is it an automatic update or they have to go through?
They've promised automatic updates. They've promised that within a few months of the L release that they will have L for it.
Okay, a few months. Okay.
What release means, I would guess, and Gina's going to correct me on this, but release means when the source code for L is released, not when the L is released. Because they can't get to work on that until the source is released.
Which is after
what has the lag release been running? Because we don't know. It's been so long since we've had a major release.
After they actually release it, at the point where it's available to the public, then they release the source. That's the usual model.
Yeah, there's the Google consumer release, there's the AOSP release, and then there's CyanogenMod's release of their software on the OSP, right? So there's going to be a little bit of lag. But I imagine that the moment that the CyanogenMod has been updated for L, this phone will get the updates, right?
Oh, that was the other thing with my son buying a new Nexus 5, was that... it then said, there's a software update. There's a software update. It basically made him run three software updates in a row to get up to 444.
That's frustrating. Which
seems it's like Windows all over again.
Yeah.
Badly
Service
done.
Service Pack 3.
It's like, make all the diffs, Google. It's not that hard.
I have to say, though, there's only one phone that allows you to get a digital tattoo to unlock the phone. This is so weird. It's a tattoo, temporary, admittedly, that you put on your skin. They say it lasts 5 days. You unlock your phone, your Moto X only, by tapping it to your flesh.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Are we sure this isn't
No, it's real. You can buy it now. Pack of 10. Yeah, from Viva Link.
magnetic? What is it?
No, it's an NFC tag in it's a sticker. Okay. And Motorola's done this for a while. So they've had the clip. That's the clip. And if you buy a set of these stickers, which I have all over the place, but there's the tattoo. And it looks cool.
It's not so much a tattoo as a wart.
It's a wart. I'm waiting for them to inject something subcutaneously that will let me unlock my phone.
Prove your identity.
It's really just an NFC.
What was the science fiction movie where you had the port in your wrist?
Well, there were a couple of those. Wasn't there the one where Logan's Run, where you had a little dot that would tell you? But then there was more recently one that actually would give you a countdown.
Well, there was Existenz where there was like a port in the back of your neck and then insects went in and out. That was.
That doesn't sound good.
No.
I don't want insects in my port.
I saw a discussion on the Google Plus Chromebook discussion that in dev, there was a flag you could set so that you do the unlock your computer with your phone. But then it wasn't working yet, but I think it was at a little too soon.
That's very risky. There's an app for the Mac called Knock that lets you knock with your iPhone on your Mac and it unlocks the Mac. But it's very risky because, unfortunately, when I installed it on my Mac, Sarah Lane got permission to unlock my Mac. I don't know how, but it's not what I would call secure. So,
oh, that's a bummer.
The movie was in time, and then you were thinking of Johnny Mnemonic, that I think was the one with the port where the insects could get in that.
Was I?
Was it
Johnny? Hang on.
Not Johnny Mnemonic? That was the Keanu Reeves, is he?
Burke says it's Existenz.
Existenz, yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
That sounds creepy. Existenz.
Wow, that's going back.
1999, yeah, okay. I'm old.
Johnny Mnemonic, you could still jack in. There were no insects involved.
So the insects was the key.
Yeah.
This is Cronenberg. This is Cronenberg said, okay, you want to put this to your body? We're going to send insects into there.
David Cronenberg has a fascination with insects, starting with the fly. Something creepy about Cronenberg. All right, a weapon against trolls, could it be? Matt Cutts says he's created a patent, or there is a patent troll solution.
He's explaining it.
Called license. Yeah, he's not responsible. He's just explaining it. License on transfer at lotnet.com. Companies like Newegg, Dropbox, Canon, Google have agreed if they sell a patent, the other companies in the group will get a license to that patent. Oh, so it only protects you if you're in the group.
I don't understand this. Well, if you sell a patent...
Depends on the license group, right?
Explain it.
Okay, and I need to read this now. Well, is this like a patent
so you'd explain
thing?
It to me.
So yeah, this is what they write in there on their front page. Dear industry colleagues, had we formed Lot Network in 2005, and if every operating company had joined that year...
if
approximately 10,000
actually becoming a cartel.
Yeah, I think this has got to be illegal. And how much does it cost to join?
I kind of don't trust them because it's written in Cold Fusion.
Oh my God!
Really? I just clicked it. Nothing happened.
That's depressing.
Look at the CFM.
I don't mean to be judgy
about programming. I mean, listen, I program in PHP, so I'm the last person to be judgy about programming languages. But this website, I don't know. I spent some time on it, and I still kind of don't get.
So the idea is you sign an agreement, you execute it, you send it to them in Beaverton, Oregon. There is a modest, they say, administrative fee. Let's see how much it costs. Oh, well, depends on revenue. If you're a small company, less than $10 million in revenue, it's only $1,500 a year. If you're a billion-dollar company, it's $20,000 a year.
So the idea is that this is defrays costs for anybody in the group that gets sued around patents.
No, they say they won't sue you. They say it's not. You're basically buying a license.
It reduces the value of trying to sue over a patent because so many people have licenses to it.
That's the other cost is if you join, you are now a member and you have to adhere to these terms. So if you sell a patent, absolutely, that'll reduce the value of that patent.
This is like secondary blackmail. Okay. So if they sell a patent to a troll, then you get protection against the troll for your $1,500 a year. So it's a protection racket for people who like large companies who have lots of old crappy patents that they want to sell off to trolls.
Now,
like,
Google has joined it.
Like BlackBerry, for example. Okay, yeah. BlackBerry is about to be this problem because they're going down the toilet, but they have patents, so they're going to sell the patents off to trolls.
Right, and in fact, if they had been a member of this group, they might may have gone down the toilet sooner.
But if they do that, then the patent trolls will pay less for the patents.
Right.
Well, that's exactly it.
Because so what they're doing is actually like, it's a reverse indemnification.
Matt Cutts has stopped his run, has pulled over. There's steam coming out of his ears.
You
don't understand this.
No, he's on leave. He's hanging out with his wife. I hope he's on a beach somewhere.
I hope Matt's not listening to this. You know, we'll get a call from him in 3 months. He'll say, hey, I just listened to that.
He put up a big picture of roses that he gave his wife, and my response was just simply, well, so you did stop to smell them.
How nice. Isn't that great? Yeah. Good news. Google's bringing free Wi-Fi to New York City phone booths.
I was like, I kind of remember where the closest phone booth is to me, and I have no idea. I didn't even realize they're still around.
Is this an Onion article?
If you look at the picture, Gina, you realize that there are ads all around the streets of New York, and that's what a phone booth is now. See that? Doesn't that look familiar?
Yeah.
You see?
Yes,
you don't think of it
familiar.
As a phone booth. You think of it as a billboard.
Right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I guess Sandy did sort of make phone booths useful.
Oh, yeah, you need phone booths.
Well, this is fascinating to me because when I was working at BT, this was one of the things that I was saying is like, oh, we have all these like big red boxes in the street. Wouldn't it be great if they were Wi-Fi hotspots? And they were like, yeah, that could work, but it's going to take a lot of changes to the phone booths. But it actually makes a certain amount of sense because the phone booths are in the places that, you know, they've been taken out of all the upscale neighborhoods already, but they're in the places where people still actually use them, so there will be a good place to fill in the Wi-Fi hotspot.
And you get Wi-Fi for 85 feet at least around each site, and phone service, free 911 and 311 calls. 311 is information. The city is also encouraging people who want to do this to offer cell phone charging stations. That would be useful. Short local calls for free.
In the middle of the street with my phone plugged in in Times Square. Then I'm going to have Elmos coming up trying to hug me and get paid. No.
So you may wonder, you may think, hey, well, doesn't Bell Atlantic, or actually it's now Verizon, own those phones? No, Verizon and all the big telcos long ago gave up payphones and sold them off to smaller companies. Currently, the payphones in New York City are owned by 10 different companies. And the companies do have to franchise. I actually know one of the guys who does this. It's a very interesting business. He bought his phones from AT&T. AT&T, it was a small enough business and growing smaller all the time. AT&T just didn't want to deal with it. He says, for me, it's still a $1 billion business, but for AT&T, it's like, who cares? And he says almost all these, he services phones all over the country. Almost all of them are now cell phones. They're not connected to a landline network. They look like a payphone. It's an interesting business. He says, look in front of Walmart, in lower income communities, in the bodegas, in the small stores.
How do you use a phone card?
He used to sell phone cards. In fact, I think he still does phone cards. That's how he got into the cell phone the payphone business. And he says, really, this is what was really interesting to me. The real business is how do you collect the coins? Because people are using coins. So where this guy's great. I don't remember the name of the company, or I'd give him a plug. He's the father of one of Henry's best friends at college. And so I was visiting Henry, and I sat and talked to this guy for a couple of hours about the business. And I was fascinated. He makes a very good living on this. And what happened is that the key is being efficiently picking up the coins.
Well, there's the first user case I've heard for Bitcoin.
Maybe. I mean, I think you probably can use cards and so forth. But yeah, remember where these are and how they're used. People still want to drop a quarter and make a call. You don't have a phone, or you lost your phone, or whatever. You need to use a phone. It's basically a loaning you a cell phone for a fee. And he's actually developed algorithms. He says, we're very much like UPS. Our trucks don't turn left. They've developed algorithms to efficiently collect the coins. The more efficiently, the more money you make. And now he's branched out.
He's become, in many states, the guy who services the Nestle's freezer cases. Because the same algorithm used to pick up coins from coin payphones have become very useful in delivering ice cream sandwiches. And actually, this is the other thing. Those freezers are heavily instrumented. He says, we need to know when to bring ice cream and how much ice cream. And I said, well, you count them or something? He said, well, we do have sensors inside the thing, but mostly we just weigh the thing. There's a little sensor. And when it gets light enough, time to send a truck. Because we have all the flavors.
Wow. That is interesting.
The world is an amazing place.
It is.
And there are all the, I think there's lots of businesses like these where people, you know, say, oh, that's not exciting or cool. I don't want to.
This is an entrepreneur. I mean, this is a we get so caught up in Silicon Valley entrepreneurship. This is a real entrepreneur who sees an opportunity.
Brilliant guy.
He does it. Yeah.
And software is what made him successful because it's the software that tells the trucks where to go. By the way, it's true. UPS does not turn left.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Because a left turn is time-consuming because you
get... Except in the UK where they don't turn right.
Well, then they don't turn right in the UK. No, and they do it sometimes. There are places they'll turn left, but the software that's routing the UPS driver or the ice cream truck guy is smart enough to let it turn left somewhere where it could be done easily and effectively, like a one-way street, but not where it will be turning left on a two-way street onto a two-way street because that's you got to wait till traffic gets by.
I imagine a guy in brown shorts who just decides, I'm gonna be a rebel today.
Turn here.
I'm gonna take a little break in the intersection.
Yeah. Yeah, really. So
in related news.
Yes.
Google is offering free Wi-Fi in Uber black cars in Philadelphia. That's in the rundown somewhere.
This is smart. Google's doing the little the breadcrumbs thing. You know, you don't have to make a whole loaf. Just add up enough crumbs, and you get Wi-Fi everywhere. But you don't want to come up against regulators. Hey, it's just in the phone booths. It's just in the Ubers.
Well, I remember when we got to metro-wide Wi-Fi. Philadelphia went through a big project where there were string
first
routers
city.
At every phone pole, and the government got involved. And there were like five bidders, and then it never happened.
You know what happened? Comcast and Verizon and AT&T went to the state legislatures. They got laws passed in more than 30 states banning municipal Wi-Fi.
Your old Comcast and Verizon. Speaking of phone companies, just Josh Marshall, who's a wonderful, wonderful journalist at Talking Points Memo, who's online. He has a great tale today. He got a $5,000 bill, I think it was, for Verizon. And he's not a Verizon customer.
Ow.
So then he tries to call Verizon to say, what is this? And he has to verify that his number, but of course he doesn't have a number to verify he's a customer to say I'm not a customer, so he can't get the bill. So it goes to this whole thing. They try to say, well, this is a government requirement to have an emergency phone line. Say, what? And then they gave up. And then when he canceled 2 years ago, two of the lines self-replicated.
What?
And they're saying that it's Josh's responsibility to pay the money.
No. So
this is a sequence that's going to keep going on.
This is like slamming.
Yeah. It's the Verizon equivalent of the Comcast call we talked about.
God. These monopolies. And people complain about Google.
Yeah. I've got to go through Fios. I just realized, I was saying, boy, I'm a little slow at home. I pay for 50 megs. Well, it was the story that they're now going to go symmetrical. Same up, same down. Well, yay. So let me do a little check here, and I can do a screenshot and put that up and be happy. But I'm paying for 50. I got 25.
No.
So now I got to deal with Verizon. Go through the whole McGill.
I'm convinced that Ryan Block Comcast call is something Comcast likes because they don't want to talk to you. No. And so what they really want you to do is dread getting on the phone.
It's true.
They get those Comcast reps get ranked down if the calls get too long, if they take too many calls. The worst thing that can happen is somebody calls once and then calls back again because it wasn't resolved. Best thing to do, just don't call us. And generally, that's going to make them money because what do you do to call them?
That's true, because their thing. I need to call the bosses up because my Comcast bill is now $300 a month.
Yeah, and do you not dread them? Do you not dread that call?
And it's like, God, do I actually want to go and do this today? No, I don't.
It's not worth my health, literally.
I should do it live while we're on the air, and then we can troll them that way. There you go.
I'm going to call Comcast tomorrow. I'm saving it up for a day off because I know I'll be on the phone all day.
No, do it on the show, Leo. There you go.
Yeah.
This call has been recorded for service reasons.
I will. Well, yeah, and by the way, you do have to say that in some states, and California is one of those states,
you have to
tell them
free, yeah.
It's a two-party state. You have to tell them you're recording. I want to give them more money. I want to add Turner Classic Movies.
You've been trying to do that for weeks.
I know.
Trying to do that for weeks.
I tried on the website. Okay, there's no way to do it on the website. You can upgrade your package, which I want to do. But as soon as you do that on the website, it says, okay, make your installation appointment. But I don't need an installation. I clearly the website, they want you to call them or something. So, but I didn't want to call them because of Ryan Block. So I did a chat. And I chatted, I explained to the guy, and the guy said, okay. Well, I walked through the whole thing. He said, now, this is half an hour later through this chat, because you could tell the guy's doing 30 calls at once on the chat.
Yes.
Because there's long pauses, and then he said, you still there? And then, he says, okay, now log into the website and add the package. I said, but I did that. Now it's going to want an installation. He says, oh, just ignore that. I said, okay. He says, schedule an appointment. It doesn't matter when. I said, okay. Now, I'm very nervous because I know a truck's going to show up tomorrow. So I scheduled an appointment. And then he said, okay, now, this is the Comcast chat representative. He says, now that you've scheduled an appointment, you're going to get a new chat with somebody else. Tell him what you told me. I said, but I just told you. So now I tell him. And he says, okay, I understand. He doesn't say there's not going to be a service call. He just says, okay, I understand. The other guy says, okay, the first guy says, bye. Bye.
No!
And then...
Don't leave me.
And another half hour goes by. This isn't chat. Another half hour goes by, and they say, so you want to downgrade your service?
Oh,
said,
my
no,
God.
No. And I'm so afraid that they're going to cut off my internet or they're going to do something bad that I disconnected.
You should have just been like, OMG, FML, KMN, you're killing me. Chat that.
So I think Comcast wants us to have PTSD. They really don't want us to have any interaction at all because the likelihood.
Absolutely. That's their goal. The goal is for them to, for me to go, oh God, $300 a month, okay, but can I face calling them this month?
It's worth it not to talk to them. A Twin Cities man is upset about the way his family was tweeted on a Southwest Airlines flight. He was asked, he was on a flight from Denver to Minneapolis with his kids on Sunday. He was asked to get off the flight because the gate agent didn't like a tweet he wrote about her service. Before boarding, the man, Duff Watson, and the agent had a disagreement. Watson says, I was left, you know, very upset, very embarrassed, very humiliated. He's an A-list passenger. That means he gets priority boarding. But the agent wouldn't let his kids board with him, 6-year-old, 9-year-old. He said, well, you can get on, but your kids can't. And Duff said, all right, real nice way to, this is literally a quote, real nice way to treat an A-list. That's their, you know, priority guys. I'll be sure to tweet about it. And he did. He tweeted, wow, rudest agent in Denver, Kimberly S., gate C39, not happy at SWA. Got down, sat down, the family sat down. They kicked him off the plane.
On what? I mean...
And then they forced him to erase the tweet before they would allow him back on.
What?
His kids are crying, literally, 6 and 9 years old. He said there was no use of profanity. There were no threats made. There was nothing other than, you know, a tense exchange between a customer service agent, a customer, and a tweet. The customer service agent said, I'm going to call the cops. I feel threatened. She said, you cannot board the plane until you delete the tweet.
Wow. Talk about abuse of authority.
Streisand effect for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Southwest has apologized for the incident.
and the passenger says he's never flying Southwest again.
Apparently, they gave him $50 vouchers.
And he says he's never
which he can never use because he's never flying that airline again. The new corporate misbehavior is screw your customer, then apologize. Say, we're going to investigate this.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Well, no, but that's in it. The point is that they use the Twitter stuff for reaction. That was my, you know, I clicked on a link this morning and I got fished by Yahoo Ads.
Oh, that's nice.
That was lovely. So I tweeted about it. And now Yahoo Concierge Services emailed me saying, we're trying to explain about phishing to you. It's like, no.
This is what happens now. If you
tweet. No, you are serving phishing ads. You need to fix this. Yeah,
at first, when you tweeted, you know, Frank Elias and then the Comcast Cares. At first, when you tweeted, they jumped and they did something. Now, and this happened about a year ago because I remember I tweeted about Comcast and I got a call from Comcast executive whatever. And it wasn't a call to say we're sorry, we're going to fix this. It was berating me. It was
no.
Like, yeah, and so that's the new thing, is oh my God, let's not fix the problem. Let's
under
just,
what basis? What do they say?
Oh, I can't remember. She was mad that I don't know. I hung up on her.
Jesus.
Let's move on. I don't want to talk anymore about this. I just feel like there is some trend here that is not a pleasant trend.
Everybody watch Twitter tomorrow for Leo's Comcast call.
Right? No, I stopped tweeting because I don't want the executives to call me and yell at me.
I was just well then record that as well. It's just like
oh, it's an endless
yeah,
thing.
Then you tweet
and they're
going
to win because they're a monopoly. There's nowhere I can go, so we are held hostage.
Yeah, there really is a fear that they would just cut you off just to F you.
It's worth $300 a month not to get cut off. See, I'm paying. Okay, so one of the things
that's true. I don't want Comcast to cut me off because yeah. That would be annoying.
I spent a lot of money, $200 a month, to go to Comcast Business so that we would have unmetered 100 megabit service with no bandwidth shaping.
Hang on, that's $200 a month.
$200 a
month. I'm canceling my domestic one and paying that.
It's great. It's worth it. And then, wait, because I thought, well, of course. Comcast, one company, they'll cancel the domestic. So now I'm paying, even though I don't have a router. They came, they took the router, they put the business router in. But they didn't cancel my regular internet. So I'm paying for two internet.
Marshall. Yeah.
And then I have to make a call.
Uh-oh.
And I'm not going to, because I'm deathly afraid that they will, you can call, but I'm deathly afraid, at least Lisa will yell at herself, but I'm afraid, see, what I don't want to do is come home and Lisa says the internet's not working because I canceled the, you know, you know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. It happened here when I was in Paris. And I got a call from my wife saying, the internet stopped working. I had to do with that Comcast chat thing in Paris.
It's the
going,
worst thing ever.
He's like, can you fix this thing? It's like, no, I do not have that information. I can tell you where to get that information, but I'm in Paris. You just cut my family off the internet. Stop it. Yeah.
Coming home to spouse rage while like the Netflix spinner on your TV is going like this is the worst way to come home from work. It happened to me last night. After all that Android, I went home and I was like, why does our internet suck so bad?
Yeah, I get that one too.
A couple of weeks ago, we actually called the Comcast out because the TV stopped working. And the guy who came found that under the house, the hub that they plugged the UHF connectors in had been under there for so long that like rats had nibbled it or something. And it had just got to the point where the TV stopped working because, you know, it's digital TV now. So it just hit that point where there were enough bits being dropped that it could no longer send us TV. And we were wondering, well, that's kind of a bit slow. And he said, yeah, this is what's happened. We were like, oh.
Rats.
And
did they charge you for the service call?
They didn't charge us for the service call. They replaced that piece and they unplugged the cables that were going to the rooms we no longer use and so on. But
occasionally, you know, it does happen. And I've had this happen. You get
it was a
good
physical
service
problem.
And they're great. And so it's not universal. And I don't know. I mean, Jeff, you got contacted, I'm sure, but I got contacted by Comcast reps who anonymously said, well, it's not completely our fault. They incent you to do this. You know, your pay is dependent on it. One guy contacted Mike Elgin and said, you know, what you don't also know and don't hear about is the software that we're Comcast grew by acquisition, and none of the software talks to anything else, right?
Yeah, that was the guy who said to me, right.
Yeah, was that you? Yeah, it's a mess. And so what you don't know is our systems are crashing as we're talking to you. We're not allowed to say that. But
yes.
Isn't that great?
That's about right.
The rep in the field is not only untrained, but we can't even interact with them. and give them what they – it's just a mess. It's a systems problem. Google is here's a good thing coming out of the EU, I think. Google has been told by the EU to stop calling games with in-app purchases free. Apple has also been told the same thing, but Apple hasn't done anything about it yet. But we know these in-app purchases are really the big cost of games and sometimes cost a lot more than upfront costs. So starting in September, the Google Play Store will no longer use the word free for any game that requires in-app purchases. It also is going to come up with some targeted guidelines for games to prevent encouragement of children to buy items. This is an ongoing problem. Apple got sued and settled a class action lawsuit by sending us all gift cards because of in-app purchases by kids. The EU says Apple has regrettably not provided any solution or timetable. Apple's response, Apple takes great pride in leading the industry in parental controls that are incredibly easy to use. We, over the last year, have made sure any app which enables customers to make in-app purchases is clearly marked by court order. We've also created a kids section of the App Store. We have even stronger protections. Our goal, blah, blah, blah. And we will continue to work with the EC member states to respond to their concerns. So Apple's
dodging. Well, I mean, this is a plague on gameplay, isn't it?
That's really the larger one. I mean, yeah, kids are going out and buying fish and, you know, every once in a while I'll get about 10 emails from the iTunes store, each of them $2.99. And, you know, these things happen. The worst plague is you think you're getting a free app and it's just unplayable unless you give them more money.
Yeah, it feels like we were talking about this last night. There's kind of a difference between the apps that are, you know, effectively impossible to play unless you pay for something, right? Like you can do very, very limited, you know, stuff in it versus the apps that you can do, you know, a fair amount, but then but there's the, where's the line? You know, how do you draw the line between those two?
Well, we in our reviews from, I think we might be do this in a more formal way, but have always, when I review a quote free app, I'll explain in-app purchases and I'll review it with the point of view of how playable is it if you don't. I'm after my bad experiences with The Simpsons tapped out.
It's just not games either. Tim O'Reilly recommended an app which is a very good app and I'll probably pay for it. I'm not going to resent the money I'm going to pay. I just want to be upfront called Sleep at Android, I think it's called.
What does it do?
Hold on. It monitors your sleep as Android. And, you know, I've got, you know, these things on my wrist that I can't get to that do that. But this, this is wacky. You put the phone on the mattress.
Hey, it's better. It could be worse. It could be in your underpants. But go ahead. Okay.
And so because of motion and noise and the sensors, this is the power of these things with sensors.
Yeah.
It sees whether you, how much you slept. And, the great thing is I compared it to my, you know, wearable, and it's pretty similar. So it gives me, let me see if I can find a graph. So here's a graph of my sleep.
This is like the Fitbit or...
Yeah, but I don't have to wear anything. So right. It's interesting.
Here she is. She's putting it in her bed.
Well, here's the other thing about it.
Wait a minute. She's sleeping on the bed. So you don't put it like under the mattress. You have to put it next to you?
So it's on the mattress next to you.
It's on the mattress. It has to be on the mattress. I tried an experiment last night, and I put it on the nightstand.
No.
It didn't work as well.
No, it has to be on the mattress.
I put it on the mattress.
You're supposed to see if you wiggle, yeah.
That's creepy.
And if you want...
This doesn't really work if you have dogs, does it?
Or anybody in bed with you. This is for the loner.
That's true.
Here's the... If you want to, it will record your snoring.
Oh, I do want that.
When you go up,
does it know who's snoring there? Yeah. Can you settle that argument?
Yeah.
Now, here's the other question I have. So I don't know in any of these apps. I haven't. You know, it tells me how much of my sleep is deep. Nobody tells me what I should have. How normal it is.
Yeah, it's so funny. They all say, like, I've done this, and it says you were restless 89 times. Is that a lot? Is that a little? I don't know.
It gives you zero data. So I had, this was a good night. I had 52%. Deep sleep cycle.
That's good. That's very good. You slept
well.
Is it
good?
Yeah, what you're supposed to do. Nobody, everybody's different. You're supposed to
snoring 25% of the time.
You're supposed to say to yourself, how do I feel today? Do I feel good? Well, then that's a good number. Do I feel tired? Well, then that's why.
I always feel crappy and tired.
Me too. What they don't take into account is
what do you expect?
Those of us over a certain age. are tired all the time.
It feels like they could put those numbers into context based on other users' data. Yeah. And that they should. I'm going to say that it's their responsibility to do that. I have a deep aversion to apps, and I build an app that shows numbers. But my argument against so many insights in ThinkUp is like, what does this number mean? Like, it's the Tufte thing, right? Like, without context,
right?
What does 12 mean? You know,
A little out. Here's a nice feature. So if the alarm goes off, it gets you out of bed. You have a giant QR code next to the mirror in the bathroom. And you can stop the alarm.
Or you can have it ask you a math question.
The alarm gets you out of bed. You unplug the phone. You go in the bathroom and you show it your QR code.
And you're awake.
You're awake. Otherwise, you couldn't do that if you were asleep.
Like other things, it'll pick the moment to wake you up.
Yeah.
So the other morning, it woke me up a half hour earlier than I wanted.
Yeah, no, that's not cool. Not cool.
It plays you lullabies?
It's a cool app.
I'm playing. So presumably a lot of these are in-app purchases.
Well, so anyway, yeah. So if you want to hold on and do something, it's $4.95. And again, not much money, and I wouldn't resent that, but I just want to be upfront.
It will will work with your Hue, so you can have the Hue slowly wake you up. The Hue lights can slowly come up.
Oh, yeah, the Hue lights. Yeah. That's cool.
It'll
yeah.
work with your Pebble, so if you have a Pebble, you can just wear the Pebble, Chad. I wonder if it worked with Android Wear. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I already have this app.
Not yet.
Oh, you already have it?
Yeah.
But there's a difference between this and...
I don't use it. The thing is for a while, it's funny, though, you mentioned it waking you up 30 minutes early. There's kind of an idea that you should be woken up when you're in the light sleep cycle. And right, so exactly. That was actually what I was looking for. I just kind of got over that.
You said what you're going to do is set a range.
Right. Exactly.
And if you set the range at, don't set it before you want to wake up. Set it so that it'll wake you up sometime in a half an hour after you want to be woken up. Otherwise, it'll wake you up earlier.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what the Gear 4 did. And I had an iPad app set up for that. I just kind of grew out of that. Now I just want to wake up when I need to wake up and monitor what time I go to sleep.
The QR code's just one of... See, this the problem is, and we've had... I know people like this, where they'll hit the alarm unconsciously and it turns it off.
Oh, yeah.
And they just go back to sleep. So they give you... You could do math problems.
Weight challenge.
Shake the phone a certain amount. Or you can find sheep. Or you could do the QR code. So it forces you to get... I think this is kind of cool. I got to point out, I'm in the Google Play Store. Now, maybe it's different on the phone, but here it doesn't show me what the in-app purchases are on the website.
That's my point.
It should.
It should. Right?
Apple does that.
There's a difference between this and spending $600 playing the Kardashian game, right?
Because, by the way,
you
great
can't do
game.
Anything unless you have the Kardashian game,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing how well it's done.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I just read about it on Jezebel and thought $500 on that? Wow.
It's easy.
Well, that's
it's
right,
easy.
That Jezebel writer. It's easy, right? But you basically can't do anything unless you buy the K-Stars. Or
Abby's
it
trying
is.
Not to buy K-Stars. My daughter's playing it. She says a really annoying thing is it keeps sending you notifications. Your fans are losing interest. Quick, do something Kardashian-like. You're not playing, by the way, you're not playing Kim Kardashian. You're playing her friend. Or actually, you're not even her friend. You have to get to know
yourself.
Her.
It's like Sim Kardashian. Yeah.
Yeah, Sim Kardashian.
I am so proud to say I have the faintest friggin' idea what you're all talking about.
Yes,
and
you
I'm
do.
Staying that way.
You know who the who was it? Was it the was there was a member?
Well,
of
I know
the,
who they are. I don't know what this. The
there was a member of Congress who said, "What's a Kardashian? Is that a machine?"
They're actually for you, Jeff. Like they're an amazing brand. Like that's just embraced every single platform, right? Like reality TV, books, and this app. The fact that this app is doing so well, it challenges my notion that these are not smart people, right? Like these are smart people.
Yes, but it proves that Faust lives.
So it's John Dingell, who is among the oldest members of Congress. He's 88 years old and apparently doesn't know anything about the Kardashians. But it's fun to follow him on Twitter, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Instagram is like, you know, is their thing. Like they're...
I'm the last original author of the Clean Water Act, but I have no idea who or what a Kardashian is, and I rarely play games. Staff has now informed me of what a Kardashian is. I'm only left with more questions. I'm following him. I love him. Oh, this is good. I was going to check this on the phone. Do they tell you on the phone whether there's in-app purchases? Like on the phone entry?
I just found another app for these people called Mindroid.
Yeah? What's that do?
That it's an auditory visual stimulation device.
I need that.
A mind machine or a psycho Walkman. It provides each of your brain hemispheres with a signal, either audible or visual, with a slightly different frequency in order to stimulate your brain waves.
Ooh. Wow.
Then it says at the bottom, caution, shall not be used by users suffering any epileptic or cardiac symptoms.
Oh, dear.
I don't think I'm downloading that.
No. No. Hey, we got to take a break. I forgot that we have... that this is a show.
A show to do.
I'm just having so much fun talking with you. This is really just like sitting around having a beer, talking with friends. Kim Kardashian, by the way, will make $81 million on that app this year.
You know,
that's amazing.
See, that's the redistribution of wealth. It's like the lottery.
Yes, they're going the wrong
way. People stupid enough to play the lottery suddenly get lots of money.
She won the lottery when she was named Kardashian.
Yes, that's true.
You know what my daughter did not know, and what I think a lot of people who know who the Kardashians are, you know, because they got famous because of reality television, but you and I know that the reason that their dad,
yes,
was the first Kardashian, became famous because he was he on the defense team for O.J. Simpson?
Yes.
I think that's what it was, yes.
So that's
I'm in the midst of watching season 8. I have just watched all eight seasons of the Kardashians.
Oh, Gina. Gina.
Is it good? Is it good?
Yes. It is great trash TV. I mean it just is.
I'm shocked. I'm just shocked. You've crushed me. I thought you were so much above the flotsam of the world, Gina. Oh,
I'm
no, you're human.
I'm trying not to be judgmental or hoity-toity or over-intellectual. I mean, the Kardashians are a huge brand. I didn't understand who or what they were, why people cared about them. I started watching the show, and yeah, I mean, I sort of get the appeal. I won't go into my Kardashian thing, but but particularly with this app, I find them a fascinating brand. I think that they've done an amazing thing across lots of different platforms. I think there's like really interesting sort of interplay of like gender and media and like who's a personality and publicity and privacy and like just, you know, I mean, they made a show.
Gina, you've justified it all just now.
You gotta wonder what, I mean, their father, Robert Kardashian, who was the first celebrity in the family, friend and defender of O.J. Simpson. He died in 2003. You gotta wonder what he, by the way, at the age of 59. So, mm-hmm. Ooh. But you gotta wonder, what he would have thought of all this.
That's a recurring theme.
Refer to him?
Yes, they talk about him a lot.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I guess, so the mom was actually friends with Nicole Simpson and was really upset. It sort of contributed to their divorce. Whatever, I'm not going to get into.
Then
she married Bruce Jenner, and then Kendall and Kylie. Whatever.
Wait a minute, she married Bruce Jenner?
Yeah, Bruce Jenner is her current husband. Yeah, and then they had two kids.
Bruce Jenner, the swimmer?
Not just the swimmer.
Not triathlete, the race guy, the track guy, the 76 Olympic medalist.
Oh, he's a swimmer.
He's a swimmer.
Swimmer junior.
He, remember the...
And have you looked at his plastic surgery recently?
Way out of control.
Oh. Oh.
Okay, now we got to look up Bruce Jenner. He is, according to his website, the world's greatest athlete.
Kevin is sitting there saying, tacky Americans, tacky Americans.
Decathlon.
He's married to Kris Jenner.
Oh, decathlon. Yes. Oh, okay.
Who is Kris Kardashian.
Exactly. Oh.
Decathlon is pretty cool.
Oh, he was a decathlete? I thought he was a swimmer.
Yeah, no, decathlete.
Oh, that. Well, then he does. Wait a minute. Kendall Jenner goes topless. Channels are fun. I'm sorry. I've lost control of the show.
Control.
You guys.
Make some money, Leo.
I want to play this game now. I might have to spend some of that money on Kim Kardashian, Hollywood starlet, or whatever it's called.
Superstar.
But it is not a cheap. Have you played the game?
I have not. I've actually resisted the game.
I'm going to put it on Jason's OnePlus One phone.
I watch the show, so I don't want to spend any more hours on these people. But I do find them fascinating as a brand and as a marketer.
Abby really likes the game. She says it's actually a really engaging game.
Yeah.
Abby's 22, but, you know. Our show today brought to you by the one place in the world that wants to bring better websites to the world. Better websites through Squarespace. Have you played the Kim Kardashian game, Henry? No. At least one.
Would you admit it to your father?
Would you admit it if you had?
My God, the entire chat room is like so disappointed in me. I'm really sorry, you guys.
Now, Kim, if you want a site that never goes down, consider Squarespace.com. The best hosting, the best software, lets you design the site. You don't need a team. It looks like you got a team, but you don't need a team with Squarespace. You start with their gorgeous 25 designer templates, but not merely gorgeous. What you don't see is under the hood that these templates are engineered to be state-of-the-art web technologies. They're mobile responsive. That means they look great on any size site. And look at that. To get started, you don't need to give them a credit card or anything. Just your name, your email address, and a password. Now you got it for 2 weeks. Play with the templates. Add your content. You can import your content from your existing site if you have got one. And then change the template. Nothing, you know, you don't have to re-add the content or anything. The template is completely separate from the content. That's another way it's very sophisticated. Also, e-commerce is built into each and every template. That's nice. Squarespace is just fabulous. I'm so impressed with their commitment to quality, to their customers. They have the best support ever, all from their offices, which is nice in New York City. So you're talking to somebody who really, you know, knows what's going on. They're available for email and chat 24/7. The customer help site has self-help articles, video workshops, webinars. It's just great. And you'll get all of that for free for the first 2 weeks at squarespace.com. If you decide to buy, it's very affordable. It starts at $8 a month, and that includes the domain name for free if you sign up for a year. They have apps. The Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad lets you check site stats like page views, unique visitors, social media followers. They've got a blogging app that you can post, of course, but you can also drag and drop images, change layouts, monitor comments on the go. It's just it's really impressive what they've done. Squarespace.com. It's free to start. Just click the Get Started button. All I ask is if you decide to buy, you're going to get 10% off, but just use our offer code TWIG, TWIG. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIG for 10% off when you decide to buy. Google's offering $1 million for a better power inverter. Inventors, hustle on over. This is part of the Little Box Challenge. Kevin, what's a power inverter do?
It changes AC to DC, basically.
Oh, it's the brick that we have on every device we plug in. Because AC is what's coming out of the wall, and most batteries want DC. What's wrong with the existing power inverters?
The story will tell you.
Good question. They probably like waste too much power.
Yeah. We believe, says Google, that inverters will become increasingly important to our economy. Wow. As solar, PV, batteries, and similar power sources continue their rapid growth, more broadly, similar forms of power electronics are everywhere, of course, in laptops, phones, motor drives, electric vehicles, wind turbines. We expect that innovations inspired by this $1 million prize will have wide applicability across all those areas. So there's a number of different kinds of inverters, I guess.
Can they also make them lighter?
And they do, you know they're wasting power because they get hot. And we do know that inverters, if left plugged in, will use power even when there's no draw.
Whenever Google puts out these calls for either bug bounties or crowdsourcing invention, you know it's a really hard problem because with the brainiacs at Google haven't figured it out.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. This is a big problem. I love this page for the Little Box.
This isn't gonna be easy.
Little Box Challenge. Littlebox Challenge.com. Wait a minute, let me start it over again. It starts with their they're squishing a truck. Think shrink, it says. And then a giant dog trying to get in a little tiny dog bed. the Japanese, the Tokyo subway station where they're stuffing more people into the car during rush hour. A kitten in a cup. Using a hose to vacuum. I can't continue to narrate this.
No.
So Little Box Challenge is...
Sorry. I had it backwards. It's the other way around. It's the thing that makes AC from DC.
That's an inverter. Okay.
That's the inverter. Right. Sorry. So it's
it takes it from solar panels and batteries.
Yes. And inverts then gives you AC to run existing things. And so, you know...
From your car battery to make a laptop work.
Got it. Right. So this is something less common, but very important if you're trying to do solar energy, for instance.
But if you've got... The obvious answer is, well, why are we making AC when the things at the other end are turning back into DC again? So if you can cut the middleman out, that makes more sense. You know, because we're going through this process at the moment, we're replacing all our lights with LEDs, which actually want DC, but they have to have a transformer in them to turn the AC into DC because we're screwing them into AC sockets.
Did we mess up? Was Edison right?
Should we have gone DC?
It depends what you're doing. DC is better at short range. AC is better at long range.
That's the whole point of AC is that you can have a power plant and at a distance,
it can
send power at a distance because it's alternating the current.
Yeah, and so it's easier to scale it up to very high voltages and transmit it because it ends up being an oscillating transmission. Right. So you can it's a wave you can guide along wires, but the DC is much better for short range because you're not when you've got AC it's doing that all the time and you've got to put it through a capacitor and clip it off and make it into a DC thing so that your screen isn't flickering all the time.
So thanks to our chat room, who are all experts on all of this, they say, for instance, that you probably have an inverter in your laptop for the screen, that hams are very notoriously hate inverters because they're noisy.
Really?
They put off a lot of RF. They're used to export power back to the grid, is what one of them says.
The other thing is that the grid wants AC... and so if you've got a giant battery or a solar thing, then you would need to basically give them a waveform that they like the look of to feed into the grid.
Google's saying they want to get it smaller. So applicants have till September to register their team, the end of September. And then next year, registered teams will submit a technical approach. So you have about a year to get working on this thing. You have till July 22nd, 2015. In October, 18 finalists will be notified of their... This is something... Netflix did this with a Netflix prize where they wanted to get a better recommendation engine. I love this idea where commercial entities will say, hey, this is so important. We'll give $1 million to somebody who comes up with a better way of doing this. The X prize.
The great thing about the Netflix thing was the honor of winning it became so important. People spent more than $1 million to win $1 million.
Right. Fosters innovation. It's a great idea. And there's a lot, if you want to know more, at littleboxchallenge.com.
But you know, the other half of this is saying, well, are there ways we can, not need to have, running AC around the house and then having, having something like this connected to every device you're using... is less than ideal. And especially with LED light bulbs and things like that, you're literally putting one of those into every light bulb socket just because that's what you're running around the house. And if you could actually run DC wires, the LED bulbs could be that big rather than the size of the bulbs they're replacing. So there's a bunch of stuff that will mean that this will make more sense over time as we start running more DC around the house. But this is a transition technology as well.
Yes.
I think it's not my light ever when I pulled that.
Apparently, I've just been informed that a visitor to our studio has brought me an entire pepperoni pizza.
That's
beautiful.
It's good I didn't want on Twitter. The pepperoni industry would have been calling me, but thank you. That's very nice. Actually, it would have been the ham and pineapple industry. Would have been giving me a hard time. Google, the day after we did the show last week, Google announced its second quarter results. A great quarter. Revenue up 22% year over year, $16 billion. They talked about the Lenovo transition for Motorola Mobile, and that was included as part of that. Let's see. Let me just look at some highlights here. Net income $3.42 billion. That's up a few hundred million from last year. I'll take it. I'll take it. That's more than a billion a month. That's good. Discontinued operations did hit that a little bit. Our sites generated revenues of $10.94 billion. Partner networks or partner sites, $3.42 billion. They don't mention how much they made on Chromebooks. Be interesting to know.
Is that? Oh, was that at the beginning of a smart-ass line there?
Yeah, or? It was. Yeah. No. One thing they do point out. I like Chromebooks, and I've come around to your way of thinking.
Yes. And they sold a million of them to schools last quarter.
One of them I bought for our sixth grader, Michael. And it's really nice. You know, for $200, the Acer C720. Very nice.
That's a nice machine, right?
Yeah, for $200, it's amazing.
Did the school give you a choice of what to buy, or
the school gives the students one. Is it a one-to-one program, Lisa, or do they have a pool that the kids share? It's a one-to-one program, so the school does have the budget. I think partly through nonprofits like the Petter Lodge, 2-to-1. Oh, that's interesting. Two kids, one Chromebook. That's going to work well.
That's got to, yeah.
and then so we thought, well, they're so inexpensive. Michael should have his own. So we just, you know, we just got him one.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think that's a really great program.
And they laughed at the Chromebook.
They get money from the Petaluma Educational Foundation, which is a nonprofit, which we support for that. So that's cool. Income tax rate. This is I don't know how long this has been going on, but both Google and Apple are great pains to point out they pay a lot of income tax. Despite the Dutch turnaround and the Indonesian, Polynesian, upside-down cake or whatever they use, 21% the effective tax rate. That's, you know, less than I pay, but it's, you know, it's good. I think I once had an accountant who said, that's about where you want to shoot for, 20%. Same guy said,
don't I wish.
Go take more deductions.
but plan for a third. Yeah.
Yeah, plan for a third, but pay a fifth. 20%. What do you think? Yeah, we're in California. We're in a high tax state. They say they don't say federal income tax rate. They say our effective tax rate. So I don't know.
Well, that's always, is that they counting across all countries?
I don't know.
Is that averaging between the tax they don't pay in Ireland and the tax they do pay in America? Or what?
Next time I want you on that analyst call, Kevin Marks. Thank you for the pizza, my friend. This looks like good. Where did this come from? Mary's. Now, if anybody wants to send me a Pepe's pizza, just fly out.
Have you ever heard "Don't look a gift horse in the mouth"?
I'm sorry, it's delicious. I love it. Wherever it came from. Headcount: 52,069 full-time employees. Of that, 3,485 were Motorola.
Jeez, I remember we did numbers on this show for Google employees when we're heading over like 20,000, as I remember.
Yeah, 52,000, huh?
Jeez.
52,000. Wow.
So, you know, everybody, all the tech companies actually reported pretty good results this quarter. So, I don't think anybody had a bad quarter except BlackBerry. I don't even know if BlackBerry had a bad quarter. They might have had a great quarter.
Microsoft took a big charge. But
Microsoft had to take a charge for the layoffs, over $1 billion charge for the layoffs.
But also a big charge for the tablet not doing very well.
Yeah. They did that this quarter or previous quarter? They took
this
a big
quarter,
one. Yeah, because they took more than $1 billion on Surface a couple of quarters ago. Recode, Kara Swisher, the most powerful tech journalist in the world. She can start a fire with her eyes.
That's why she wears those glasses.
That's right.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like she's used
her mutant powers to determine there have been no Google Spotify acquisition talks. None. There you go. That said, Spotify co-founder and CEO Daniel Ek did indeed meet with Google executives about various and substantive commercial deals at YouTube, Google Play, and Android. But one source, reflecting many others, said, "Don't shoot me with your eyes," and there has not been a single conversation about Google's interest between the two. There was never a price, never a negotiation, never anything. Please don't shoot me with your eyes. All right.
You guys talked about the Swisher, the New York Magazine profile.
Yeah. What do you think of that? We also talked about the Elle Magazine profile of DeBries. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I might have to bring that back because we wished you were here. So tell us about what you thought of the the picture of Kara on the beach.
That was great. I really enjoyed it. I learned things that I didn't know. I thought, of course, the things that stuck with me were the personal stuff. Like I didn't realize that Mossberg had walked her down the aisle because her mother, you know, was not supportive of her relationship. That was interesting to me. I didn't realize that they had that kind of close personal relationship. It was great. It was a great piece. I mean, Kara has such personality. She just makes great stories. So many great quotes.
Kara's quite a, she's been on our shows, of course, many times. In fact, as I pointed out last week, those dogs that she's holding in the ivy pooped on our floor once. So
I like that she tells various founders that they dress like Ellen.
That's apparently her line. You dress like a lesbian is her line. Like, she uses it on many people, apparently.
I aspire to dress like Ellen, so I would take that.
I think Ellen dresses quite well.
I do, too. I'm going to search for her stylist.
However, having said that, I've got to a little kudos to Google's top hacker, Parisa Tabriz, who appears to wear black almost exclusively. It's slimming, she says, shrugging. Not that she needs to worry about that. She has a simpatico face, always worn bare, that could easily lead from one ethnicity to another, and a classic Gap-in-its-heyday sleek tomboy aesthetic, dark wash jeans, clean line crew necks, and Chuck Taylors with the occasional bomber jacket thrown on top. This is, we talked about this last week, Elle Magazine's profile of Parisa Tabriz, whose official Google title is Security Princess.
Security Princess. Okay.
You didn't see this?
I didn't. This is going into my queue now.
Get that Elle Magazine out of the trash and read it. Actually,
I know. I missed Elle. Credit. I always read Elle.
Do you?
No, I don't. Not even close. Are you kidding?
She just appears on in the Kardashian game. Yeah.
Do I look like I read Elle? I am wearing a gray T-shirt.
Actually, but as Jeff and I concluded in your absence, because we didn't have an actual woman, that this actually is a surprisingly good piece, part of Elle's Women in Tech series. That despite that one paragraph, which is a little bit much, really does talk a lot about, you know, some real stuff, and does promote the idea that women can be successful in a tech environment. She talks about the challenges of that, and it's pretty good. Doesn't hurt that she looks good in black.
I can rock those Chuck Taylors.
Oh, those Chuck Taylors look good.
I had no idea that Elle was doing a Women in Tech section. I don't know how I feel about this.
Hello, Elle. Hello, Elle. Guess who you're missing? Oops. Guess who you're missing?
I guess the L word in this case stands for lovely. There's a whole article here from December, Why We Need Women Who Code, featuring a movie star pretending to use a computer. Copyright 20th
and
Century Fox.
And it's a photo gallery.
Yeah, it's a photo gallery.
Okay. Yeah, it always is, isn't it? The Women in Tech list always a photo gallery?
Yeah, they're so good looking. You'd never know they were nerds.
I know, can you believe it?
Can you believe?
And then she took off her glasses and let her hair down. Oh, she's beautiful.
Why, Miss Tabriz, you're beautiful. Actually, there is a gooder article. If you follow the links to why we need women who code, actually does profiles of female coders and founders, and it talks about how they learn to code, being a woman in the field, and so forth. So it's kind of neat. Nice. Yeah, I mean, they're doing something. There's somebody from Code for America, some engineers at various companies. Hey, it's Elle. What did you expect?
That's true. That's true.
Let's take a little break here. What?
Nope. I just want to make sure we get to Right to be Forgotten for my rant of the week.
We still have the change log, which we've missed.
That's right.
We're just Jeff's rant of the week coming up. But first, let me show you my box. This, my friends, is an amazing device. We've talked about Lantronics before. They have a their XPrint server line, which takes any printer, even dumb old USB printer, and puts it on the Wi-Fi network and makes it compatible. Now, the first one we showed made it compatible with AirPrint, but this is the one you really want. This makes any printer compatible, almost any printer, 4,000 different printers, compatible with Google Print. And that is very cool. Google's Cloud Print means that you can print from your Android or cloud device, but you can also, I could print to my home printer, because I use one of these, from here, over the internet. This allows your USB printers to be shared over the network. It automatically discovers them, sets them up. There's no software to install, nothing to download. You literally open the box, plug it in, and voila, you are printing via Cloud Print. The Cloud Print Edition is $149.95, supports up to 10 network printers and 8 USB printers simultaneously. We've talked to people who've used these. In fact, I talked to an administrator at a school who said, you know, we had printers all over the school. We wanted to make it easy for people to print wirelessly. I plugged this in, and it was I'd never seen anything so easy. No configuration necessary. It just works. It's really, really cool. If you've been looking to get Cloud Print to work with your older USB printer, or you just want to turn a printer into a Wi-Fi printer, this is awesome. It'll even work with the Chromebook, It'll even work with the Chromebook.
Well, of course, because everything good works with a Chromebook.
Android.
Why would you even doubt?
And the Chromebook
good would work with a Chromebook.
Actually, it's more surprising that it works with the Kindle Fire. Even works with the Kindle Fire. Now, here is the site, xprintserver.com/twit. You can find out more about it. If you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T, you'll get free shipping. XPrint, this is such a cool technology. xprintserver.com/twit. Make any printer, even that old funky USB printer, a Wi-Fi printer that supports Cloud Print. That is awesome. xprintserver.com/twit. All right, let's do the changelog first, Jeff. Hold that rant.
Well, I will.
Because I want to eat some pizza. It's time. Play the trumpets.
The Google changelog.
Boom, 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 boom. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the latest from Google with Gina Trapani.
Good news for Windows users who are also using Chrome. In the latest beta version of the Chrome browser, supports Microsoft's Direct Write API. What that means for you is that typography fonts look really good. You can see there in the screenshot there on TechCrunch. It's actually maybe not as easy to see. You can kind of see. The top one is without the update, and the bottom one is with. You can see the fonts there are much, much clearer and better looking. So you'll need a Windows. You have to be a Windows user on a machine that runs at least Vista in order to see this, and you need the Chrome beta. So very nice.
And you want the Chrome beta because the old Chrome killed your battery.
Ah, was that true? The current stable version on Windows is a battery killer?
They updated Chrome because, frankly, it was a it was killing people with Windows batteries.
Wasn't it just on Windows machines?
Yeah, it wasn't Mac, anything else.
Who cares about that?
Jeff doesn't care.
Get a Chrome.
Windows is like the Kardashians of operating systems. Jeff is like...
Oh, Gina.
So you do need to be in the beta channel for not Canary, but beta channel for this.
You do. You need the beta to get the good looking.
I don't know which version of Chrome has now fixed the battery life issue. I don't know if you have to. I'll find out. Keep going.
That just came out today, by the way, or this best week.
This is not Typekit. This is a different thing. This is for your desktop.
This is Windows on desktop Chrome beta. Fonts look much better. It uses the Microsoft's Direct Write API on the desktop. Google Maps for Android is getting an update that's rolling out now. A few nice updates that are probably hooked into Android Auto. So we've got some voice actions when you're in navigation mode. So you can do, how long until destination, show traffic. Bicycle directions now display elevation, including elevation comparison for multiple routes. So you can say, hey, show me which route, involves less climbing. Your places now appears in a slide-out nav menu. The voice icon replaces the person in the search bar that used to load places. And the Uber card now shows in the car tab of navigation instead of just public transportation and walking. So Uber in the cities where Uber's available will be show up. So nice update to Google Maps there. And I believe that that's just Android. The Google Play app on Android is updating to a new version. I haven't gotten it yet. I keep tapping my settings icon. I mean, you can download the APK. But it's the kind of the first introduction in material design that you're going to see in the Google Play Store. So basically, when you first load the app, it looks pretty similar to what you've got now. But when you navigate down to an app page, you'll see that those are redesigned. So it's got the new material design animations material design animations. It's got a new white background. Apps have, you can see on the, Chad's got that up on the screen there. Apps that have a video trailer will have that, you know, prominently displayed at the top, bigger app screenshots. As you scroll downward, the page begins to gradually cover up the space where the trailer was, is pushed off screen. That's a material design motion. And when you select read more in the app changelog at the top, you can see, full screen view with the, you know, information about the app description and changes. Just a much nicer app page in the new version of the Play Store. I haven't gotten it yet on my phone, but that is rolling out now. Yeah. Android Police has an APK you can download or sideload, but I'm waiting for it to hit my phone.
Yeah,
over the air, as the kids say. Google Drive has been updated with filter views for spreadsheets. So this is for real spreadsheet nerds. Pretty cool stuff, though. There's a new filter views feature, so you can sort and filter your data on view only spreadsheets, and then you can share that filter view with a URL. So you can turn on this temporary filter view from the toolbar, or the data menu, to make adjustments to filter your data and sort it, and then you can share a link to that particular sort and view. So nice update there for spreadsheets. And finally, ahead of the Android One rollout, this is part of Google's, you know, reaching the next billion users on Android, Google's launched Maps in Hindi on both the web and Android. So the Hindi version of Maps is available to those using Google Maps on Android version 4.3 and up. So you can set Hindi as your language preference in order to access it. They've done translations that tried to stay true to the dialect, but also read correctly, but they are taking suggestions and corrections from users. So makes a lot of sense before Android One gets released that India would have Maps in the native tongue. So good for them.
The phone I do want to get is the Android One. I want to get an Android One and just show people how you can do an amazing phone for so little money.
This is not available in the U.S., but available in India, or?
Will be.
Yeah, will be. Right. It's not out yet. I'm actually sure not sure when the release date is. But yeah, I'm interested to get my hands on the Android One too, because It sounds like a really nice low-end phone. Stock Google, good updates. So it's India and other developing nations. So Maps will now have support for India native speakers
and
alongside
that, play the drums. It's the Google changelog. So I've been doing research. A couple of things. First, they do not show
pepperoni is good.
Huh? Pepperoni, excellent.
Good.
Good choice.
That's your research.
Love the pepperoni. Got to love the pepperoni. Also, they do not show in-app purchases on the Google Play Store, even on the phone. They do that on Apple. I think that's something Google should do.
Yeah.
Because doesn't it show it come lower on the screen there?
I thought it did, and I don't see it.
What's these not showing?
Well, I'm looking at Sleep as Android. That has in-app purchases, right?
Yeah, that has an app. So it's like right below the screenshot, no?
I see top developer. I see rate this app. I see what's new, description. Maybe if I expand this.
I'm just trying to show you.
Huh?
You've installed it?
Yeah. Oh, maybe it's because I installed it?
Yeah, like right below the screenshot right there, it says in-app purchases.
Oh, all right. So maybe it's because I installed it. Oh, yeah, there it is, in-app purchases. But it doesn't show you what they are. Oh,
right.
I see.
It says here
in really fine print, right above how big it is, because everybody wants to know it's 7.62 megabytes. It says in-app purchases, but it doesn't show you on the zoom in, will you? On the Apple Store, it will actually give you a list of in-app purchases and their costs, which is really nice. I mean, that gives you a much better idea. Well, you know, could this potentially cost me?
It'd be nice to see what is the average amount of money users spend on this app as well.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, because that'll tell you how much you need to spend, really.
How much you could expend, expect to spend. How much is a typical user?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a great line? You can expect to spend $300 on this app over the lifetime of the purchase. That would really kill some of these freemium apps. I think it's a blight on the App Store, these freemium things. I understand the developers make tons more money when they do it free plus in-app purchases, but that's because they're tricking people.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, it is sort of, it's a little misleading, right? Yeah. I mean, we were talking about it all about Android last night. I mean, for the impact on developers, if Google's going to categorize apps with in-app purchases separately from free apps, then that does hurt developers, right? Because users are going to say, I want something that's free. And so you know, you're going to be taken off the top free lists. You're not going to be listed as free. So I mean, I feel like you're being more honest that this isn't a free app. But, you know, some in-app purchases apps, you really can do a lot for free, and then they offer, you know, something extra. I think it's going to make developers really think, should this be in-app purchase or should I just charge someone up front to use it, right?
Well, that's why I like your idea. The average user has spent, a histogram would be nice too, but that's a lot of real estate. Yeah. The average user has spent this much on this app is a really valuable statistic, especially when you like launch the Kardashian app and it's $400. That might tell you something.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see that. And if my kid is trying to install an app, I'd like to see him. What's the average of players on this app?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I also did research on the Chrome thing, and I don't think they've fixed it. This is from Tech Times. Google has finally acknowledged a problem that has been reported to Google since 2010, that a flaw in Chrome accelerates battery usage in Windows laptops. It has something to do with the tick rate. When most browsers, including Chrome, are in active use, they run the clock at a tick rate of about a millisecond. Maybe one of you smart people can explain that to me. But when browsers are open in the background but not active, all of them except Chrome for Windows just ease up, and they reduce that tick rate to 15 milliseconds. That cuts consumption about 25%. Chrome for Windows, 1 millisecond no matter what, background or foreground. A clock tick apparently is a measure of how often Windows wakes the processor. The processor sleeps while inactive, waking at predetermined intervals. In other words, having Chrome open on Windows will basically keep the processor going. It won't be able to sleep. And this is something that's not so hard to fix. And they say, we have prioritized working on an update to fix the issue. So the stopgap, if you're using Chrome, close it. If it's in the background, don't put it in the background, just close it. Apparently, Mozilla and IE do not suffer from these issues. On Macs, Macs work differently, so Chrome for Mac is not affected by this problem. So, there you go.
You know, Leo, that white watch band?
Ugly?
It looks like you're a retiree in Florida wearing white shoes.
I thought it made me look like Eurotrash.
Oh, well, maybe, yeah.
Would you like to see my monkey?
I like it. It's different.
I don't know.
So here's the deal on this. You're probably wondering. We're talking about my Android Wear watch. I got the LG specifically because it had the white band. No, there's a black and there's like a kind of a goldish metal. But the goldish metal comes with this ugly white band. But here's the good news. It's a standard 22 millimeter watch band. So you can replace it with any watch band. So I'm just going to – I just haven't gotten around to going out and buying some other watch bands. I want everybody to know I'm wearing Wear. No question. Why is Leo wearing that weird white rubber wrist thing? That's his Wear watch.
Yep.
You can strap it to your forehead.
He'll be off
like
his parole soon.
Yeah. By the way, I kind of like Android Wear. It is definitely not anything anybody needs to run out and get. But if you use Google a lot, like Google Now, like, you know, see, it's a birthday and shows full screen the person's picture from Google Plus, and it says, it's Adam Marshall's birthday today, and he doesn't have much of a picture, but I could see the Giants beat the Phillies in 14 innings. That was last night, a game that ended at 1 in the morning. I could see stocks, see that my Fire Phone shipped. Hey, that's exciting.
Oh, nice.
Ooh, nice. These are notifications for various apps. When you slide this over, I can see, you know, what the high will be, what the forecast is for 4 days and that kind of thing. I don't know. It's got my calendar, my steps, how long it's going to take. These are all Google Now, and then it's got a picture, which is kind of cool.
Craig Newmark put up a picture, my birthday message with on his watch saying, and it looked he said he was frightened.
Yours was great. I loved it.
It looked kind of scary, yeah.
Yeah, because you were like peering over it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is a whole...
I remember a time when birthdays were like a big deal.
Yeah, the fence look, yeah.
Right. Gina, aren't birthdays a big deal, Gina? 40. What do you mean? You don't celebrate?
I mean, no. I do celebrate birthdays. I'm saying like in a time, once upon a time, before social media, before I had this like really huge like list of friends, right, on various... Like a friend having a birthday was an unusual occurrence. But now, every day,
three or four friends.
It's somebody's birthday. Yeah. Not to devalue your birthday, Jeff. Happy birthday, by the way.
No, I hate birthday. I hate it.
Sorry,
I brought it up.
All right. Well, good. It's just not a big deal. Like, it used to be if a friend had a birthday, like, we were going out and celebrating.
Right.
And it was a big deal, and it was unusual, rare occurrence. And now I feel like I'm just birthdayed out. I'm like, oh, it's...
Darn internet. It ruins everything.
It
even birthdays.
Even birthdays. Social media has ruined birthdays. That's what I'm saying. Facebook, specifically. But Google Plus does it,
Kardashian
too.
Kardashian makes it all better, doesn't it, Gene?
And...
Give me K-stars, my birthday people.
I didn't know this. I mean, the underwear comes with a variety of watch faces. I just have a plain digital watch face, as you probably saw if you were watching the video. But apparently they're going to have a new API that will let you do custom watch faces. I like the idea of having, I mean, that this one on this side.
That's
95.
Why I've been waiting for that. In fact, I put on one. I got a new one. Let me
you can download them from the Play Store. I don't know how they're doing it, but.
It's people who reverse engineered the API.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Developers are hacking around the API, and Google's actually asking developers to wait until they ship the API so that you can kind of do it the right way or the way that Google wants you to do it.
This is what Wayne Piekarski posts. As we work on finalizing the API, we would suggest not posting your apps publicly to Google Play until there's a stable published API. So,
yeah, well, here's...
get that one? That's nice.
It's called... They got one called Squares and they got one called Circles waiting for the new one. And it's very nice. It's online. But it's from a company called... Smart Watch Face Company. The only thing is, I could be wrong. I could be absolutely wrong about this, but in my imagination, I think it actually increased the battery wear.
Mm. Oh,
I'm
it
not
increased.
Sure about that. It made the battery.
Oh, I like that one, Kevin. That's not a standard. That's not a stock.
That's the
face.
Matrix one. Yeah, that's a developer one. It does the Matrix display.
Probably should not download these though, right?
Well, you download them. You download them from the App Store on your phone, and then. You get they show up as an option in the watch. They've basically reverse engineered the watch face API, and they're not going to do any particular harm, I don't think. But they want to release a proper version of the API soon. And that one's open source, the Matrix one. I'll find the URL for it.
Oh, cool! That's cool. I look forward to a Dribble being filled with watch faces.
I think it's I'm waiting for the Moto 360. I mean, I want a round one.
Oh yeah, we all do.
Yeah,
they can make a big difference.
We're all waiting.
And then we're gonna see. You know, can Apple top this? And it's toppable, but we'll see what they do.
I don't know. I'm. There are those, you know, everybody on MacBreak Weekly, I think, is in the category of believers who think that Apple will do what they did with the iPod, the iPhone, the iPad, reinvent the category. And then I'm in the other set camp that I feel like I don't know if Apple's got the mojo anymore, and I don't know if this is reinventable. Yeah. But I hope I'm proven wrong. I'd love to have something that, I mean, this is right now just kind of nice. It's nice.
Apple's got an aesthetic and a sense of style that no other company has, and that's there's true. Aesthetics and style involved here.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I mean, Apple can change this from a like this is pretty cool. To like, I absolutely must have that because it's part of my identity and it's a statement about who I am and, you know, it's a fashion statement.
I think Apple's will certainly be more jewelry-like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gina, have you lusted after an Apple product in the last year and a half?
No. I mean, I'm sitting here on my Mac and I, you know, my iPhone, my development iPhone is the old 4S. I've definitely looked at the newer iPhones, I guess it's the 5S. S
you develop
now.
On a 4S. Wow.
I do. I just never bought a new, you know, whatever. And I have an iPad too. And there are times when I thought, I should probably upgrade. But there's such incremental upgrades. No, it's never been like, I have to have this. Not in a long time. Yeah. I think the iPad maybe was the last time.
On Windows Weekly, when you were complaining about your Mac, So I was on the Mac that I use for the show, and I was going into the chat room to make fun of you and tell you to get a Chromebook.
Yeah.
But of course, my Mac crashed.
Macs are perfectly fine, and I can do things in the Mac that I can't do on the Chromebook. But I still have my Pixel, and I was using it this morning. Ooh. I like my Pixel. I think a Chromebook is a tool for a very specific situation. I don't think it's a universally appropriate computer. All right, we're going to get ready for our rants.
Oh, yeah.
Just one. But it's a topic we've done often.
Oh, I might have one, too, but okay, you go.
It's rant time. Let's get ready to rant. Oh, I'll get sued if I say that.
I'm thinking of replacing the number apparently. With the techno panic of the week.
let me take a break, and we'll get our rants of the week.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know that was a tease.
Yeah. That's all right. I didn't telegraph it.
Telegraph
it well enough. You know, in just a moment, we'll have Jeff Jarvis's rant of the week. But first, this word from Full Sail University. Full Sail offers both online and campus degree programs. We're giving you real-world experience in areas that I think people are really interested in. Yes, social media marketing, but also search engine optimization, web metrics analytics, online consumer behavior. That's their marketing degree. They have a online master's degree for people who want to keep up with modern marketing skills. But they also have programs on entertainment, media, technology. Full Sail University's online and campus degree programs center on real-world education and experience with industry, technology, and workflow. Through their innovative curriculum, you'll get your master's degree in a year. That's nice. They have a LaunchBox program. That's the Project LaunchBox that gives you a MacBook Pro preloaded with Apple's complete line of creative software tools, as well as degree-specific sets of pro-level applications. That's kind of nice. In addition to internet marketing, Full Sail offers a variety of master's degrees in related fields, business intelligence. You know, if you knew business intelligence, big data, you would be in big demand these days. This is an area that is just about to explode. Innovation, entrepreneurship. Henry should do that. Henry wants to become an entrepreneur. And new media journalism. Sorry, Jeff. To learn more about Full Sail's Master Program in Internet Marketing or any of their related programs, go to fullsail.edu/twig. fullsail.edu/TWIG. And we thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. The right to be forgotten. You know, there's the jury's still out on whether this is... I mean, at first, I completely dismissed it as stupid.
Oh, no, Leo.
Oh, boy.
I'm just winding you up, Jeff.
Oh,
but,
no. Yeah, you're like a human... You know what you are? You're a human Slate magazine.
But now that I think about it, don't you think some people should be... There needs to be some mechanism for people to kind of...
Well, you know, like the guy who's based in the Netherlands who wanted the Wall Street Journal to take out the fact that it did a feature on a tantric workshop that he had attended 20 years ago.
Well, that's kind of legitimate.
No, it's not. It was in the Wall Street Journal.
All right.
By the way, my theory is he knew the Sinatra effect would come into effect.
He wanted people to know.
He was
a tantric expert. Hey, ladies.
Certified.
Hey, ladies.
So the EU is now going farther. They've invited in Google, Bing, and Yahoo are going to come in to have a discussion about this. And according to the Wall Street Journal, two even more abhorrent things are happening with this. One is that now EU regulators are pressuring Google to stop telling the media properties and others whose links are taken down that they've been taken down. So there's no opportunity to appeal. The free speech right of these organizations is clearly affected. Obviously, they're upset that newspapers, when a story is taken down, as in the case of the Wall Street Journal tantric story, do a story about it because they have something called free speech.
Whoops.
They're allowed to, EU. Get with it. The second problem is the EU regulators are also, according to the journal, upset that Google is restricting the deletions to the country domains, the EU country domains, so that and not across Google.com. So here's the EU, as far as I read that, saying, no, we want to erase things for the whole friggin' world. Great precedent. Put that in the hands of China and Iran. Aren't you people thinking? This is about rights that operate in transactions. And there's when you go so too far with your howitzer to kill the fly, you're affecting other rights. And this is just dangerous and stupid. And it's not going to live forever because it's affecting media companies and it's affecting journalism. I said from the beginning it would. And I just want to say one more time, it's stupid.
And I, you know, to me, I always focused on just the impracticability of it. It's one, obviously it's stupid, but also it's impracticable for a lot of reasons. I mean, they've already picked one, which is that this stuff is global. But also, how's Google to know? I mean, what's the process? Is Google supposed to set up a tribunal? Are they going to?
They have. Well, there's a whole large committee now to
That's
do
ridiculous.
This.
Ridiculous.
They didn't ask me. And they have paralegals doing it. And now what's going to happen, too, is now Bing is just catching up. Bing hasn't been doing this. So now Bing's going
to
do it, too.
Oh, have they been required to have?
Oh, yeah, they've been required to. Google did it first. So what you're going to see is uneven enforcement of this. So Google takes this down. You know, Google has rejected some. There was one example in the journal story of something that said to some kind of service company, no, this link may be of interest to people who are considering using your services. You know, as in, this guy sucks. There was a whole separate case having nothing to do with this in France where a woman was, a blogger wrote about a restaurant, complained about the restaurant, and was fined something like 4,000 euros, some fair sizable amount of money.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Because, and was fined more, was held more liable because she was more popular and her file, her post, raised higher in Google search. So she was liable for being popular on Google.
And her post was really that she didn't think the service was very good. Although, admittedly, it was a little over the top the way she described it, but she's...
Welcome to the land of free speech.
This is called reviews. Yeah. I mean, imagine if you as a reviewer for many years were subject to this kind of thing. We don't like what you said about our movie, our TV show, so we're going to have you pull it down.
Well, there are still people, Leo, who want to jail you. Me for not liking Babylon 5.
Well, and well, that's true, but and...
And Bill, wait. I want to show you something.
How do they square this with that? I mean, how do they square this with the legitimate reviewers and the press?
She was
fined $3,400. She was forced to pull down the negative review on her blog, which only a few thousand people see. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, that's not okay.
It seems a societal issue, though, right? And what's really sad is she now says, I will never say bad things about a restaurant again. It's too dangerous. That's sad. She's a French blogger, Caroline Doudet. She wrote, The Place to Avoid in Cap Ferret, Il Giardino. Even she talked about the bad service and so forth. And even the guy who owns the restaurant said, yeah, we were having a bad day. I admit it. But this is harming my business. Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. She has 3,000 followers. The court, a Bordeaux judge, said that's a significant number. So we're going to fine you. You bad person, you. How dare you review that poorly?
Can't people see the implications of these decisions? Can't they see the unintended? It would be generous to call them unintended consequences. They're just idiocies. But they have an impact.
And incidentally, if you go to the Wayback Machine, you can read the review. She took it down, but it's still here.
And well, don't they see this in opera?
Now it's an article of note. I mean, now it should be available because it's part of this story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But of course, it should be available either way.
And I could tell you, if I ever go to Cap Ferret, wherever the hell that is, I'm not eating at Il Giardino.
You're convinced?
I'm convinced.
She was silent, so it must have been true.
Must be true.
It makes it more true, doesn't it?
It just does seem like, I don't know. How do you solve this, though, Jeff? Courts will do these things.
You rule to principle. This is the problem with legislating and doing court decisions to technologies. Gee, the internet's made this worse. Look at it this way. Would Europe tolerate the idea that you go into every library and take out the library catalog cards for books that people don't want you to find because they didn't like it. We would never tolerate that. So what makes the internet okay to censor, but books not?
Yeah.
Because we think books are holy.
Well, maybe that'll
okay.
change, yeah.
Well, the principle would say speech is speech no matter what the medium. And if you won't do it in books, don't do it in the internet.
Right.
And again, one more time, Europe of any place on earth should see the danger and damage of rewriting history
yeah.
and restricting knowledge.
Yeah. What World War II? There was no World War II. What are you talking about? Jeff wrote a eulogy for Forbes, which is
not
now...
Quite a eulogy. Not quite a eulogy.
And you actually... You talk about Louis Dvorkin, who kind of, you said, performed a miracle with Forbes by rescuing the dying brand, but he rescued it by killing the patient.
A bit.
A bit. Good article. Good blog post. Yeah.
It's a little media wonky for the show. Probably.
Well, I'm a media wonk, so naturally I'm very
interested. The long and the short of it is that the brand was dying. Dvorkin's a really smart editor, and he came in and he used as a candy for contributors to come in, 1,500, I think, contributors. And again, I'm all in favor of being open, but the quality was not of the high quality that Forbes journalists had. And then they also opened it up to advertisers under what we now see going all over the world in native advertising, so-called, under what they call brand voice. So when I see a link to Forbes on Twitter, I hesitate three beats. It could be a good journalist. It could be a good contributor. It could be a stupid, bad contributor. And it could be just a really wordy ad from an advertiser. I don't know which. And that affects the brand.
It devalued.
And so, yeah, it did. And they still managed to get... I don't know how much money, supposedly valued at $400 million, but they were going to try to sell the whole thing. They couldn't do that. They maintain a lot of stock. I'm guessing they probably got less than $200 million cash. 45% or more of that went to Elevation Partners. So, the thing's still alive. He rescued it to that extent. But, yeah, I think the baby and the bathwater are out the window.
And I, of course, always... admiring your sagacity and your intuition and insight, like the line where you say, and I can't wait to read this white paper you're writing, that we have to shift to businesses based on known relationships with people as individuals and as communities rather than as a mass. And that's what we do at TWIT. And I think
all this white
right.
paper will put you to sleep, guaranteed. I'm trying to finish the editing this or do my first run of editing this week, and it's I have to do it because it's what I do. I'm in the university, but no, you don't want to.
But no, but this is what we kind of do instead of mass media. The title of the Medium post is "No Mass Mass Media," which I like. But it's what we do. We don't do mass media. We do. I think of us as artisanal media. Handcrafted yeah, for yeah. An intelligent
I talk about you
audience
all the time. I met the new president of Guardian US today, and I was just telling him about the wonders of Twig today.
Oh, good!
I think it's a great example of how you can focus. Exactly, you can focus on you can be entrepreneurial at a low cost, and B, you focus on communities and understand what the communities want, and keep your ear open to the communities.
Right. Well, you have to now. You really have to. And Kevin Marks, you said you had something to rant about.
Well, this was, partly because I was listening to the show last week and you were talking about the Google Plus real names thing.
That's why you're on the show.
All right. Right.
I forgot about that. So I screwed this up royally.
Well, the rant that I did at Google I.O. Ignite, which you can play if you want, but I can give you a recap of it instead. And it comes down to the way... programmers tend to simplify the world and then get grumpy when the world doesn't fit their simplification. And that Google real names is a huge example of that, because it wasn't ever you have to have a real name. It was you have to have a name that our algorithm thinks is a name.
I accidentally started playing it, but we'll play it later.
Play if you like. It's just 5 minutes.
That's one of the beauties of Ignite Talks.
Yes, they don't take that long.
Yeah, I don't want to take 5 minutes up. We'll play it at the end of the show.
Okay, so the thing you were saying is you were referring to it as real names and verifying names, and that was not that was only ever the appeals procedure. The point that was that if you put up a thing that they thought wasn't a name, then they would get into an argument with you over whether that was really your real name or not, and then you'd have to send government documents to Google and things like that. Whereas what they had said consistently was, you just have to have something that looks like a name to us, because we want things that look like names, because then we'll have a better community, because people will think the other people are real people. So all it did was incent the spammers to use American looking names. So it was a disaster from beginning to end. I'm glad they finally stopped doing that, and that's good. But the presumption that it ever did anything to make a better conversation, I think, is wholly unproven.
Okay.
That's fair.
Yeah. Ooh. That's fair. And I understand why they felt it would help, right?
But you know, they're supposed to measure these things. It's saying...
Oh, well, maybe that's what happened. Maybe they...
In the face of everything. Well, yeah, but for 3 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
That was an internal political fight. And I've heard, when I started ranting about it on Twitter, I got stuff from people who were Google at the time saying, well, the best thing is we don't have to argue about it internally at TJF anymore.
it demonstrably didn't do what... Because as you point out, spammers just made up real-looking names. That's all.
Yeah.
So really the policy wasn't to have real names. The policy was to have real-looking names. That's not a very good policy. that's doomed to failure.
Right. And, you know, the point is you need to look at behavior. If you've got a chat room here that... anyone could be any name they like, and half of them are like Web XYZ, but they get kicked out if they do something dubious.
Yeah, we base it on behavior, right?
Yeah, and the problem with that is that actually involves humans
work.
Doing things, and that's why Google is wary of it, because they don't like doing things that require humans.
We can do it only because we have a fabulous crew of volunteers, as many as 15 or 20 volunteers who spend a lot of time in the chat. And what we learned, of course, is that you have to make it on behavior, because bad behavior, whether it's in a real name or not, just degrades the place to the point where nobody wants to be there.
Yeah, yep. And names don't. I've long said that as long as I can name a-holes by name, ergo, name doesn't stop you from being an a-hole.
Right. It's time, I think. Thank you, Kevin, for correcting that.
That's okay.
It's time, I think, to talk about our tip tool number of the week. Kevin, I'll let you do the honors because you don't have an official role in all of this. If you'd like to give us something you're excited about. Every time you've done this, by the way, it's been something addictive that I'm mad about.
The link I've put today is just a silly thing that I thought was wonderful and I think you'd like to see. So just look at my first link. And
Perfect for Geeks.
Yes.
This is Ali Spaniola. Who discovered that she needs to be wearing one of these at all times. This is some sort of steady cam for your beer.
It's a steady cam, but you steady cam for beer, so you can dance and your beer will stay stable. Because you were talking about beer as we were waiting for the show to start.
Yes.
I thought this is something you
need. Is this fake?
Yeah, I don't. How does this work? How does this work?
This is how steady cams do work. They isolate the movement of the
camera. Gyroscopes. It's all with gyroscopes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, Kevin. I'm not buying it.
If they were to make this, I think it would be very, very popular.
I've seen Steadicams that do that, but I that may well be fake.
Not that well.
Yeah, that looks pretty.
Well, he's being careful not to go too near it.
Yeah.
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 It's kind of mesmerizing. This guy's like the dancing baby.
Stop the poor man. He's doing this forever.
I can't stop watching. Yeah, that's actually a really good question that I've been meaning to ask. When you stop watching an animated GIF, do they stop moving?
Does the tree fall in the forest? Does the light stay on in the refrigerator?
I mean, I'm really puzzled. Like, is there a universe of animated cat GIFs right now?
That are just frozen?
Doing stuff?
Or they all just go.
Or do they just all say, well, have a smoke. What happens to the animated GIF when no one's watching?
GIF like no one's watching.
GIF like, just call me Bishop Leo. Only Kevin will get that joke. And it's a very long way to go to get it. Yes, you got it though, didn't you? It took him a little while. The Kevin's Ignite talk is at the official Google developers blog or YouTube channel. Is it all of it on here or no, just your talk? Oh, no, you're in a portion of it. So you're 46:26 in.
I put the link with my timestamp in.
Aren't you a smart man?
Yes.
I love it. I did a night talk once, and I love it.
It is. That's the other thing I would actually recommend to people is that Ignite talks are both fun to watch and fun to do. They're fun to watch because you get 10 of them. They're 5 minutes long. So even if one's bad, you can just zone out for a bit. They usually come with beer and audience participation. But they're actually fun to do. So the pattern is you get 20 slides that auto advance every 15 seconds.
Period. That's it.
So this means that you have to practice. You can't just sit there and stand there and waffle and go on for an hour. You have to make sure what you say will fit with, which means that the talks get better too. But then when you're actually doing one, you can never like lose your place for more than 15 seconds because the next slide will come up.
So it can be comedic. It's kind of like a slam.
And then it comes back in later. And Brady Forrest runs these all over the place. They're often at conferences.
I think they were invented by O'Reilly, weren't they?
Yes. Brady Forrest runs it for O'Reilly. There was a thing called Pecha Kucha, which was the same idea with slightly different timing.
Which, by the way, is not pronounced Pecha Kucha, but I cannot pronounce how it's supposed to be pronounced.
Okay.
If you go and look up the audio, there's an audio present.
It's because it's a Japanese word. It was designed.
No, it's something else. It's like Indonesian or something.
Finnish?
Okay.
It says it was devised in Tokyo in February 2003, but maybe it's a Finnish name. 20 images in 20 seconds.
No,
20 slides for 20 seconds each. So,
okay. By 20
Ignite
seconds.
It's 20 slides for 15 seconds. It makes it short. It makes it fun.
I like Ignite better.
It is a Japanese term, apparently.
If you search on Pecha Kucha pronouncer, the first YouTube video.
Hallelujah. P-E-C-H-A-K-U-C-H-A. I'll leave as an exercise for the viewer. Thank you very much.
I don't know why that's really so funny, but you got me with that one.
You have to watch our video of, what is it called, Pronunciation Book, the YouTube channel?
I forget it.
Yes, the one that just pronounced everything wrong, yes.
They pronounce everything wrong.
Pronunciation Guide.
Pronunciation Guide. YouTube.com/pronunciation guide. You can't stop laughing.
We have, I think, a 10-minute video that I have shown everyone in the office, and not one time has not... every single time I show it to them, everyone busts out laughing. It's
one of them's real. So somebody did it real, for real, and then somebody said, that's bad. Then they did a fake one. And I think it's pronunciation manual? I wonder if they have Pecha Kucha. I don't know.
Propolio? The Hilaki Tack. Propolio. Canolio Ninolio. Canolio Ninolio.
I wonder if Pecha Kucha's on here.
Ethisma.
It's good.
Manjama. Manjama. Man.
Whoever did this was truly inspired. Gina, your tip of the week.
Before I do my tip, I just got an email, the subject line from Amazon. Congrats. Here's a list of your apps that have been approved for the Fire Phone.
Yay!
My app got approved for the Fire Phone, and I guess the Fire Phone's coming out because you've got a shipping notification, and I've got an app approval notification. So we'll be seeing the Fire Phone soon.
I will get mine tomorrow. They announced it'll come out. It's going to come a day early. And
nice.
I'll be reviewing it both on the radio show this weekend. I'll show it on Twit, and then I'll do a full review on Before You Buy on Tuesday.
Did you see the Pogue has now hit the depths of desperation, the absolute depths of it. You've got to watch this Pogue thing.
Well, now everybody, as usual, with a new phone, Walt Mossberg got it, The Verge got it, Gizmodo got it. Did Pogue get one?
Where is it?
It's on his tech channel, I'm sure.
It's the word. No,
David Pogue, no longer with the New York Times. Maybe he doesn't get these things. Oh, here, a spark of potential. Is it that one?
He plays an old professor or something.
David really is a character.
Oh, it's really just.
This is the ad. We're going to have to skip the ad, but.
Desperate thing you've ever seen. Jay Rosen tweeted me tweeting it today. Let me see if I can find it.
If you mute your video, I can play it.
Okay, go ahead.
This is not it.
In the touchscreen phone era, gestures have taken on a new meaning.
No,
this is not it.
No, this is beyond belief how awful it is.
It's eye candy.
You know, I got a review unit, too, by the way, on the list. A box came. I was so excited. I opened it on Saturday. I was very excited. UPS box from AT&T Dallas. Inside, I opened it. I didn't know what to expect because I didn't know what was going to come. They didn't tell me ahead of time. I opened up. Oh, there's a Fire phone inside. I opened up. There was no phone in the box.
What?
It's an empty box. We contacted the people, the PR company. They said, what? No, we sent you a phone. UPS must have stolen it. I don't think so. I looked at it, and it was nicely sealed. Anyway, we sent it all back to them and said, you figure it out. There was no phone in here. Fortunately, I videoed the opening of it so that I have proof that I did not, no sleight of hand.
Oh, you did an unboxing. That's smart.
Okay. All right.
Here it is. I got the link here in the chat room. Thank you, Scooter X.
It's a smartwatch. I'm sorry. It's a smartwatch.
Oh, smartwatch. This is not it.
Smartwatch OS.
That was the Walt Mossberg review of the Fire phone. He thought it was, I would pretty much agree with him. He thought it was nothing to get excited about. All right. Keep going, Gina. What else?
Yeah, let me do my tip. My tip, and you know what? And I realized that we haven't talked a lot about Bitcoin here on this show.
We have not.
I'm not sure why. I'm sort of fascinated by Bitcoin mostly because of the technology versus the sort of, you know, the gold digging community. I feel like there are the technologists and the gold diggers. I'm more on the technology side of it because it is a fascinating technology. But Google now supports Bitcoin conversions from the search box. I'm not sure if you covered this in last week's show and I wasn't here. But you can go to the Google search box. You probably already know you can do currency conversion for all different kinds of currencies. So you can say, you know, 10 US dollars in euro and it'll tell you how many euros. Well, now you can do 10 USD to BTC or in BTC.
So BTC is the abbreviation for Bitcoin.
BTC is for Bitcoin, yes. So you can see how much Bitcoin converts to US dollars. And this is
and a graph of how you're losing money in Bitcoin.
And a graph of how you're losing money in Bitcoin.
Actually, that's actually vice versa, how you're gaining money now.
Yeah. How you're gaining. It's
one Bitcoin, $620. Right. Bucks. It's kind of stabilized around that.
It's kind of stabilized around 600, yeah. And this is courtesy of Coinbase, which is a pretty good Bitcoin wallet.
That's the one I use, I think. I can't remember.
Oh, but they don't translate Dogecoin.
Nobody translates Dogecoin. That's why we use Dogecoin. We don't want to be part of the corporate oligarchical structure.
Once Google started doing this, I tried to add BTC to my stocks on Google Now, and it was an option, but it just never shows up. So I can go in my stock settings and put BTC. So it's not a stock, right? It's a virtual currency, but it's kind of interesting to see Google. It feels like a moment of mainstreaminess of Bitcoin.
But it's the what do you call them? The twins.
The Winklevi.
The Winklevoss twins.
Winklevi twins.
Are launching an exchange-traded Bitcoin fund whose symbol will be coin.
C-O-I-N, really?
Yes. So you can buy Bitcoin over the counter from E-Trade or whatever.
E-Trade or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm figuring.
So in the same way you've got dollar tracking ones, they're building a Bitcoin tracking one, and they've been going through the regulatory nonsense to do that.
If anybody's going to make money in Bitcoin, it'll be the Winklevoss twins. Jeff, you have a number?
Yeah, I want to mention this first, that the FCC, God bless you, America, 1,067,779 people sent comments to the FCC about net neutrality. If you want to feel a little bad about democracy, that's less than the 1.4 million that went to the FCC over Janet Jackson's nipple. But let's remember that was mainly about angry bots sending the message. So
really? Okay. Is that true that wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl, the complaints were coming from bots?
But in essence, Parents Television Council.
Oh, they were people, but they were people without a will of their own.
So this week I give you a choice, Leo.
Okay.
the 10 questions that are now banned from Google interviews because they were too stupid, or 15 top Eric Schmidtisms.
Oh, God, those are both great. How can I pick? Can you do one from each?
I just go, why don't you go to the Schmidtisms and pick?
Are you going to put this on me, huh?
Here, a lot of what he says, he's right about, and it's wrong. And he said to me once, it's death by Twitter. It's out of context. Nonetheless, they're pretty funny.
I don't know. I think...
Some of them are very
after
right.
I complain so much about crappy CEO interviews that I really should support this.
I do too.
Here's a guy who speaks his mind, however crazy it is. One day we had a conversation where we figured out we could just try and predict the stock market, and then we decided it was illegal, so we stopped doing that.
Yeah, I feel like that.
The pictures help.
Yeah, they do.
On Google's staggering collection of personal info, would you prefer someone else? Is there a government you would prefer to be in charge of this?
Which I actually agree with. Yeah. I see why people get
on getting caught on Google Street View. With Street View, we drive by exactly once, so you could just move. You see us coming, get out of the way. On chance, serendipity can be calculated now. We can actually produce it electronically. What does that even mean? All right, let's do... Okay, those are the Schmidtisms. And let's just try... Give me one interview question.
Oh, okay, well...
Banned from Google interviews.
Go ahead and pick your way through.
Oh, it's a slideshow. Round manhole covers, because everybody knows why manhole covers are round, to look like the Nest thermostat.
Piano tuners.
Piano tuners. How many piano tuners are there in the world?
Well, the answer...
Yeah.
We'd answer however many the market dictates. If pianos need tuning once a week, and it takes an hour to tune a piano, and a piano tuner works 8 hours a day for 5 days a week, 40 pianos need tuning each week, we'd answer one for every 40 pianos.
And then you're supposed to show that work, and then show maybe some calculations about roughly how many pianos there might be. But it doesn't matter if you get the answer right on these.
Dead beef.
People don't do these anymore, do they? These interviews.
They don't do this anymore.
I think it's deprecated.
These are the banned ones. This is the point. But no,
yeah, that's the bad ones.
Well, what's a good one, Kevin Marks? If you were going to hire me tomorrow for British Telecom, what would you like to know?
Well, the thing is that these brain teaser things were very popular.
Yes.
But they don't actually tell you anything useful,
right?
Because they just tell you whether you've seen that kind of question before. And it's like any of these assessment things.
They're too well known now.
You know, my son's teaching SAT prep this week, and he's helping students get their SAT scores up a lot, which you're not supposed to do. In theory, it's supposed to be an objective assessment. But actually, if you sit down and do, you know,
apparently
10 tests in a week, look at what you got wrong, you can get better at this stuff.
Yeah,
and it's like any of these things. Any of these assessment things don't actually make sense. There was a really good article on Model View Culture, which I'll stick in the chat, about how we do engineering recruitment and how it ends up being a "Are you like me?" question, rather than
"Is this
useful?" And it referred to Joel Spolsky's Guerrilla Guide to Interviewing, which Joel then took off the internet because he was ashamed of the old version of it. But the original version of that if his guide is very much a sort of gleefully saying the unwashed masses are stupid and I need to find the bright ones, and the bright ones will understand these things that I'm saying to them. And they are, literally it was the piano tuners in Chicago question. And it's those kinds of things. And what it comes down to is, the other thing he said in the original piece was pick something that they say that you know is true and say, well, that can't be true, and get them to defend it. So basically troll them in the interview to see how they respond to it, which is,
why troll your interviewees? Let's just, have a civil conversation.
Let's put someone in a terrible power relationship.
You're selecting people who are in like crappy chat rooms. Sorry, Gina.
No, I was going to say, like, you're just, it's such a, let's put someone who's totally not in a, someone in a power
position.
It's
a power trip.
Someone who's disempowered,
it's
and then
totally
have the person in power say, you're wrong, and then see how the disempowered person reacts. I mean, it's like a ridiculous. I haven't done a developer and engineer interview in years and years because I've been lucky enough to freelance and to start my own business and all that. But I really want to be in one of these interviews where they ask, what was it in the internship? If you were shrunk down a half an inch and stuck at the bottom of the blender, how would you get out.
Yeah.
Because I would like to just look at the interviewer in the face and be like, is this the question that you're deciding whether or not to hire me?
Yeah.
Right. Because if this is the question, then this is not the right place for me to work. Like, and get up right. and walk out. Because it's true. It's just so indicative of stupidity. I mean, it's fun to look in this article now what questions have been banned. But it's so crazy that Google, like, fell into this trap.
It's hard.
You know
what?
At any time.
It's very hard to hire people.
Yeah.
It's just hard.
It's extremely difficult. Yeah. It's extremely difficult.
Yeah.
It's true.
Getting people to actually write some code, it can be a good thing. Getting them to write, that's not necessarily a bad idea. Getting them to do it on a whiteboard may not be
that's
ideal.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
There's, and Google itself has backed away from this. Now, when I was interviewing for Google, there was a list of banned questions. There was also a sort of pool of, these are fairly good questions, what do you think, in an internal discussion board to try and make them better. But there was, it was still very hard to not get people to play gotcha when they're interviewing.
I've got to wrap this up because this is the party for the third anniversary of the Brick House, and there's a lot of people gathering. It was 3 years ago tomorrow, but we're not going to be here tomorrow. So 3 years ago tomorrow that we opened the Brick House for the first time, July 24th, 2011.
Years.
I know, is that hard to believe? We had a big parade and everything, and so we've got pizza. Thank you. And we've got a pretty good audience. So thank you all for being here. We're going to celebrate in just a bit. Coming up, Tech News Tonight. I got to end, though, with David Pogue's review of wearable watches. I think this is the one.
This is the depth, yes.
Yale Online University, 802052.
Welcome back, students. In this virtual class, we examine the desperately primitive early efforts of your ancient ancestors to develop technologies for the...
What is he wearing, a sleep mask?
Learning about these crude devices is useful for context. Without knowing where we've been, how can we know where we're going? In previous virtual meetings, we've looked at the UNIVAC 1, one of the earliest computers, the Apple II, showing the computer shrinking to desktop size, and, of course, the new... representing the further shrinking...
All right, I can't bear this. So thank you very much.
It's just desperate.
We'll leave this as an exercise for the viewer. Thank you very much, everybody. Kevin Marks, really appreciate it. Anything you want to plug, Kevin, before we go?
Just the usual IndieWebCamp.com. You set up your own website. There's a community of people to help you do that.
I really want to do this thing.
Known thing, yeah.
Known.
I'll get... Well,
he emailed me, and I'm just waiting. I guess they want to get it off of whatever weird database they were.
They're getting to the point where they can do hosted stuff. But
good.
He's based that side of the bridge as well. So you should just get Ben to drop by sometime.
I will.
That'll be fun.
We'll talk to Ben. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it. Jeff Jarvis at the City University of New York. He blogs at Buzz Machine, author of Public Parts. Great to see you once again. Take
Always
care, my friend.
You.
You're not so pink today. You look good. Gina Trapani, before the candles burn down. Founding editor of Life Hacker. You find her now at thinkup.com. Get your Think Up. It's so awesome. Thank you,
free
everybody.
Free trial. Yeah, sign in.
Oh,
you got a Twitter, Facebook account, full free trial, 2 weeks, no credit card required. Just try it out. Thinkup.com. Just sign in.
We started the show 3 or 4 days ago, but we're going to wrap it up now. We do it normally 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time on This Week in Google.
Look at that cake.
Thank you, everybody. Happy third anniversary, Brick House.